All right, it's rolling now.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Michael, this is better.
So you can break this thing down.
It's easier to understand where you're going. The natural areas. Yeah, it's going in too many directions again.
That is very broad. It's intended to be broad to allow for. To be inclusive as we move forward. Right now, what we're doing is priority sites. That's all they're advanced, and there's recommendations for inclusion and stuff in the plan.
Well, I got the distinction between animals, plants,
they want to grow. They just don't want to sell
the rock stuff isn't in the stuff that you site specific.
Correct.
You can find it or say that it's there. But I break them out specifically so that people can look and see exactly what it is we're driving
at. Which ones are communities, which ones are plants, which ones are geological. And there's a technical report that does break those out and identifies what the site is and why the site is important, whether or not there's a plant element or natural community, what that is. There's a lot of detail that goes behind this, and it's sort of consolidated.
Well, I mean, just reading on the surface.
Yes.
Sometimes we should bring the DOT in and some of their landscape architects. To talk about context sensitive design. I mean, they'll buy into all this stuff.
Yeah. Most of it is, I mean, you said it. If you give people the information up front, whether you're a developer or a municipal official, it's easy if you understand the rules and the expectation to follow the rules and fulfill the expectation. But if it changes, if it's too
long, we're setting this up to change it dramatically. I don't know whether it's the first 18 months backwards or 36 months.
And to some extent, that is by design because, one, we don't have all the information and we have to allow the ability to continue to compile that information. And two is, the council has, at least in my mind, been very firm in its position to make this an iterative process with active municipal involvement, and that requires a lot of time and energy that we can't do now. So if we want to be true to that effort, then during conformance, we have to have the ability for the municipality to tell us what's important, and the council
can do that. I'm certainly in favor of doing that basic municipalities and preservation area.
The preservation area is very easy.
Well, but we're not making any pressure on it. We haven't fixed the scenic resources. We haven't fixed the cultural and historical resources. Let me give you a hard time here. Cultural and historical resources. We haven't done anything.
No, we have
we've taken a list that other people have.
Yeah. But that's a huge step.
Huge step? It takes 10 seconds?
No, that's a huge step. That is taking years.
It's taking years
for the network.
We have been working on our efforts and working with the community to compile that information for inclusion of legal networks. And that's what we've been doing. In this case,
those lists.
You don't think you just have to use it?
No.
You can get them down to Charlie Brown's.
That's true.
When we started 18 months ago, the part of the problem with historic is it's all SHPO, is all hard copy. SHPO is all hard copy. So what we did is collaborate with SHPO, Historic Preservation Office, and digitize the inventory of known sites.
Which is a
good
thing.
Yeah, I understand.
It sounds secretarial.
In what context?
But the secretary can do it.
Politically incorrect word.
It is
typographical.
It is
Clark.
digitizing or spatially inventorying sites is not, once the site is identified, is not a highly specialized skill. Identifying the sites is a highly specialized skill, and it requires a high level of understanding of the criteria that designates the site.
But we haven't done any of that.
No, we haven't. We've relied on the support from the department.
Suppose I'm an environmentalist. Yeah. What have you done to help me?
Yeah. Well, I hope one appreciates the enormity of the task to compile all the information upon all the resources.
Sure, understand what environmental standards have been raised. Maybe we'll get to something, like maybe wastewater. But we haven't, unless I've missed something, because I'm not proposing to raise it in respect
to the water. Yes, sir.
We adopted the DEP standards.
No, and that was unfortunately, we're going to revisit that. We used a state classification system to help inform protection needs. But the protection needs that we're proposing are far in excess of what the state currently applies. They are what we feel are appropriate in consideration of a variety of things, land condition, quality of the resource, and classification and existing regulatory
standards.
Or throughout the region. Throughout
preservation
the region.
Area.
Preservation.
300 feet.
Right, preservation area was easy. We used 300 feet. We agreed that that was an appropriate protection.
Well, I will find out what incremental we've done in the planning area that
it's up to. Yeah, and it's that was a year up. A year up.
But that's 300 feet. If we did that for every street, that is really tough. I mean, we build beautiful parks. That has a very important book that runs through it. And we put restrooms in it. If we had to put them 300 feet away, they would have been out in the left-hand lane of the day, on the eastbound side.
But maybe if we want to...
So, you know, I mean, some of it...
If we all agree, or council agrees, that the charge is primarily directed at protection of water quality and quantity, then that protection of that resource requires protection of lands adjoining that resource against uses that are inconsistent with maintaining that quality. That is, and 300 feet is not unreasonable.
Now,
it's also catching the understanding that we have huge, we society has huge impacts on water resources that affect a lot of people when we disturb areas adjacent to those areas. Non-point source pollution, runoff, sedimentation. Every time you see a stream run brown after rainstorm, that's not natural. It's not natural. That's a result of alteration of the landscape and the vegetation in proximity to a stream.
But it's kind of interesting, though, because going back to that example that I gave you prior to building this park, it was a trailer park. And the people, unless we went in there every couple of weeks to check, they were dumping raw sewage into the brook. And it was really awful.
And we had
so
to.
So not only did we get rid of all of that, and there's,
But did you build the bathrooms in the area that was previously occupied by the trailer park?
Probably some of it was.
Then that would be allowed.
But it was just 50 feet away, which is the standard now. And we did other things to improve the environment.
Steve, you better eat something. We're going to
have. I had a used one, so. I don't need
to
have that one.
We don't want, meat.
Food
fuels the brain.
How late are we going to go?
My brain is shot at this point. So.
How late are we
going to
go? Does anybody know?
This is scheduled to go to 10. So.
No way.
We've been here since 2:30.
That's a long time.
Really?
Well, I'm reading the stuff at 6 o'clock. I've certainly had my fill today.
I was on my way out to another meeting then. It's been a long day.
was a pleasant surprise that Governor Cuomo showed up.
You didn't know he was coming?
I had heard, but it wasn't confirmed.
I think it was very short.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know he was coming?
Pleasant surprise. With all the things he has on his plate, I think that he would take time to come here. Says a lot about
what we're doing.
There we go. Did you see any?
I'm sure he enjoyed them on the way up.
There's a definition there. It would be worth considering.
Always, you know, take people to hear comment about.
You got your sugar?
Someone told me he went to a Giant game last week by helicopter. Not to bring up that Giant game.
Please don't.
I see a recurring theme.
But he did show up at Verizon's headquarters yesterday.
That's right.
We're on board. And HPD News has a helicopter there. And they have the
helicopter. They have the
helicopter. Are there for a reason?
There we go. Yeah.
It's a linear argument.
In fact, we have three resumes. We're currently reviewing this.
Now,
what's the
That would be the sure justification.
I don't know. Things that just can drop like that give me a worse feeling than small things that can go on.
Exactly.
Down. Exactly.
Yeah.
You want people to
do it?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yes, you get higher than the 4 months back that you have facial hair. Looking at you and John here.
Well, I started Goldman Sachs in 1980, and I started my beard in 1987. Somebody, when they hired me, I had a big beard. And then I said to somebody, "What do you think about that?" And he really nailed it. He said, "Ah, he's investigated your past, and you're going to shave." It's an awful thing to say.
My husband's growing a beard for the first time. Maybe he's going to apply for
it. Not really.
Just decided to quit shaving.
Is he really going to let it grow, or he just kind of got lazy on vacation?
He's so despondent over that. You know, he's really desperate for racist things like growing beards. When I complain about something with my hair, he always says, at least you don't complain.
This is true.
We had another person who had heard about, let's say, around 1983 or 84. Something about him in shape. I said, geez, God, it looks like your head fell off. He was bald. Looks like your head fell off. And you glued it on backwards. It was clean shaven the next day.
That's very cute.
That's very mean.
Right. It's very cute.
So have things changed there? I mean, whether now all of this, you know, body piercings, physical piercings, and stuff.
Go to the boardwalk.
Right, you know, that was perfect.
Go to the boardwalk if you want to see them.
Yeah.
I was at this daughter's school carnival, and it was
so shocking to see women with them.
No tattoos for you. I wonder the people that my mother would not have me associated with in fifth grade.
I know. I've said to my husband, you know, we have private to the library. money well spent on this. Do you think he'd ever do that? You know, he could have said yes just for ignoring this.
Okay, folks.
Yeah. One, two, three, four, five.
Yeah, Jeff, just start the meeting. Ross is here with us.
We can bang through this with just five people
just
here.
Should we look at population? Should we look at population regularly?
I said one more time, I can't hear you.
I was like, should we track population?
No. I recommend we follow your recommendations. On to the next.
We're doing the economic indicators now?
Yeah. This has been on the website for a month, and we'll just talk about what we're going to do with it.
Right. The wastewater is really one that takes time. I don't know that we're going to get through that.
Yeah.
Because it's the one that drives so much of the land use.
Exactly.
No, I said it.
Yeah. It'll.
I think the write up was pretty comprehensive.
Sorry.
But they understood some of the complexities of treatment plants or servicing areas in and out of the highlands and in and out of the planning areas, some preservation areas.
I'd say over the last 2 years, I've been pretty competent in answering what people can do, can't do through the Highlands Act and as the main change to the plan. When we get to wastewater, you know, and extending from the preservation into the planning area, and we're going to do with this, or it's not captured here, you didn't locate this. That's really where I get tripped up, and just getting worried buyers from everything we compete. But those are always the questions that seem the toughest to deal with. Is there a lot of
water and wastewater.
Right.
And you know, the problem of trying to assess what capacity is out there that is unused capacity in wastewater is an awful lot of the treatment plant's capacity is not used up with no wastewater, it's infiltration. That comes in through the some of the pipes, or the what do you call them, the panels. And every town says, "Well, we're going to put in a lot of money aside, and we're going to there's cameras and all that you can put in through the pipes."
Very
But you know, you pay a lot of money, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
Then we know that we get off. That's when we have huge storms. We know that our treatment plant runs at much greater capacity than it does normally. So there's always something going on. So if everybody could fix that, then we'd find we've got capacity to build a lot of stuff.
Where we can sustain what we've been doing.
And you know what? Water is going to become more precious than oil.
Mm-hmm.
And not very many states are really looking ahead at that. Mm-hmm. I know I have kids living down in Atlanta, and they really are starting to have problems, and they're not doing anything about it. So we can really make this work. This will be a great economic asset.
Well, and Henderson, Nevada did an economic impact study that I pulled and cited through for some of this. Because both Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, all the reclaimed water projects that they have where they water your lawns and they find out the water. And so everybody's got the buckets and they're grabbing their storm water themselves to use. We're in really good shape.
I'm sure you all have
a special So he's having a lot of incentive grants.
Ross,
okay. Thank you. It's not often that one gets a chance to follow up on the governor's comments.
Opening act.
Yeah, but he did make an interesting statement that the economics could work out better within this regional master plan than they otherwise would, and that has kind of been proven out through the Pinelands model, as John Stokes was here, the executive director of the Pinelands, showing the comparative economic profile differences between those Pineland towns and the surrounding towns. So that was very nice to hear, and I do believe that the economic analysis to date show that there is an opportunity to have that bear out. But generally speaking, this is one of three components of the financial plan, or the financial component of the plan, which consists of the baseline economic indicators, the real beginning, the cash flow timetable and the fiscal impact analysis as it relates to our build-outs. So with that, the baseline economic indicators really just comprise of eight categories as detailed under number one. And we just formulated these and have established regional values. And the report's been on the website for over a month now, and I do have hard copies. If any council member would like to have a copy, please let me know. But these are the eight indicators that we're starting with, and they focus on the traditional indicators such as population, unemployment, as well as taking a look at the particular land value indicators that that we studied. So that's number one.
Could I ask a question on that? You have transactions listed as your last one.
Yeah.
Are those transactions going forward, transactions looking back, both? And if they are looking back, how far back are you looking?
Sure. We've received the SR1A reports, which are county roll-ups of all land transactions in the county. And we have the data for 2001, 2, 3, 4, and 5. We have OPRA, the Division of Taxation, for their current or their next iteration, which is out on the street, I'm told, so I'm waiting for that. We are looking at 2004 and 2005 for this particular piece, and just to kind of see what were those initial changes in transactions as they relate to statewide trends from the enactment date.
So really they're in the enactment date forward.
That's correct.
I'd urge all of us to charge you with looking at 01, 02, and 03 so that we're looking at what I think is apt to be a crucial question. Have land values gone up, gone down, within certain categories, going up, going down, going sideways, and how much?
Based on the announcement of the Ohio Islands Act?
Well, yeah, the 01, 02, and 03 are more right. Interesting to look at in terms of engaging changes than 04 and 05, obviously, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And 03 may be wrong, I mean, but look at all of them on a year-by-year basis.
Yeah, that's the real reason. Sure, and that was that's something that we can add into the report for the plan.
Let me just, because I'm not sure you answered the question. You did say you're going to do 06, but then are we also going to keep going forward every year?
Yes, the SR1A reports come out quarterly.
Super. You might just want to spell all of that out in here. If you think your base is 01, 02, 03, you know, lay that out, and we're going to gauge everything from 04 forward to see what's going on.
Yeah, as I make the change to the report and add that data, we certainly will do that.
Okay. I'll preface by that I am not a finance guy nor an economist. But when I look at these indicators, they seem to be what I would call sort of traditional indicators. And how do you account for things, you know, this growing idea that there are ecosystem services which are provided by land conservation, natural resource protection? Where are the public investments in infrastructure, that cost, and whatever that effect of that investment on the economy is? And then, I guess the last one is sort of how do you deal with avoided costs by if the plan moving forward prevents the development of a river channel that prevents flooding and avoids having to pay for millions of dollars with flood control. How do you factor those kind of questions into this baseline analysis?
It won't be, as it now stands, it won't be captured in baseline. It would be captured in the fiscal impact analysis portion of the financial component, which does try to capture infrastructure impacts as well as community, let's say, quality of life type issues. That's always a very difficult thing to capture and apply metrics to. But Rutgers, who is performing this under a contract, is trying to do just that, and they've released several reports trying to assign those metrics, and as a result, they've used those for our fiscal impact analysis, and we're reviewing their first iteration of the first two build-outs. The other thing is as part of an appendix item, we did have a paper produced for us by Eloise Salmon from Princeton, who looks at the economic benefits of open space preservation. Again, what does it do to the surrounding property values? What does it do for flood control? What does it do for air quality, quality of life? Again, do you get that? So that's going to be coming up in another presentation. This one, as you said, is traditional. This is really was based on the Pinelands model, that they have a long-term economic monitoring program. And when we went down there and spoke with them, that's what they do for their economic piece. And so we decided, in addition to cash flow, which is mandated by the Act, the financial component should also start establishing this region as its own economic engine or own economic profile. And they wish that the Pinelands folks intimated that they wish they had the technology to have done that in 1979 to be able to start where we're starting now.
Does that fiscal analysis piece, that's a separate element, does that address the issue of sort of the downstream benefits to the water receiver, folks that get the water out of Highland Green?
I don't believe it goes that far. We're still trying to get more information as the methodology and approach that Rutgers used. At this point, we looked at this, and these are the changes. We're trying to get more information about that exact formula, and I think they're a little hesitant to share all of that with us at this point, but we're asking. So I don't think we're going to get there with this first iteration, but that's exactly the type of things that we should be building upon once we move on.
Yeah. Do we have any way of measuring the economic activity occurring within the Highlands region and what it means to, for instance, the state in terms of sales tax revenue and things? I mean, you know, one of the things we're charged with doing is, you know, we keep hearing about green tourism, ecotourism. So it seems to me if we're going to have some way of measuring our successes of creating this ecotourism or increasing what's already existing, we need to have some sort of baseline for that.
Yeah.
And if we can demonstrate that this not only fosters economic growth and jobs growth within the region, but it's putting more money in the state treasury. So I don't know if you thought much about that or if you have a way of measuring that.
Yes. What we've done is I've spoken with Eric Stiles from the Audubon Society, who has offered a piece that really starts talking about how do we calculate the true value of ecotourism. And one of the programs that's going to be recommended to the council is going to be a ecotourism program, which would either consist of extending the tax or coming up with a group of interested stakeholders who would work on the ecotourism component. Part of that would be reviewing the information that I'm due to receive from Mr. Stiles and seeing exactly how we can, what metrics did they use, what data do we have already established that we can start plugging into these. But that's something that we do plan to have. But again, probably not part of the initial fiscal impact analysis.
But you're talking about establishing something that specifically tracks it, so you like identify people that are participating.
Well, we're going to have to have some sort of baseline, right?
Yeah.
Just so that we know whether our strategies are succeeding or not. It's right. One of the things we're charged to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, once again, Russ, why don't you try to get through all the policies so we can see how they fit together.
Okay.
We still have to know how the fiscal analysis fits in, which is a different thing.
Sure.
John, could I interrupt real fast?
Yeah.
On the transactions, you're going to distinguish between planning and preservation. Unlike everything else, where wide and aligned is a dramatic, there should be a dramatic difference there. So you'll distinguish?
Yeah, we do think that those SR1A reports do have block and lots, so we should be able to. We'll be able to. So the second piece is we have the established baseline. The second would be develop a program that would provide that monitoring or a municipal economic tracking program that would just, again, regularly provide these updates and provide the reports for the council to see what are the changes in these indicators and how do they relate to North Jersey as a whole, and also the statewide averages. So that'll kind of give us a traditional report card. And that's number two. The Municipal Economic Tracking Program, I did want to just make a clarification that this isn't the municipalities. This doesn't necessarily mean the municipalities, the onus is on them to provide that data for us. It's just looking at municipal economic data sets. We will be asking municipalities to review these numbers and confirm or improve what we have. But I do want to make sure that this isn't just put on the municipalities. Number three, municipalities will be asked to review the economic data that will be in the regional master plan and provide comments. Things like, hey, why didn't you look at retail sales per population? Why can't we look at this? And we will be able to take that into consideration and let this grow and expand as the council deems appropriate. The fourth piece is in implementing the municipal economic tracking program would be to assist municipalities in participating in this program in that they should receive forms and instructions as to this is what we have and this is what we need. It's feasible that we'd be looking at asking municipalities for a level of data as it relates to acquisition. This is what we show in acres preserved, total costs, and please provide us any updates. And I think that will just improve the baseline that we're building here.
Are you talking about an ongoing basis for us?
As the reports come out, we would send them to municipalities. I anticipate, and for their comment and review.
Oh, you want them to approve it.
Right. Our population shows this. Why did you use this number? There's an inconsistency with the SR1A.
But they won't know. Municipalities only get their data from the census.
Same report. So I think that
I don't think that you need that from the towns.
No. Well, other than sending it to them to help them inform where they are, the second thing would be, did we make a mistake? We're aggregating 88 towns with 8 different indicators, with subsets of those indicators. We just wanted to, if it passes the common sense test, and if these numbers are there, just more for their review and
I
comment.
Would just be careful not to burden the towns.
Yes.
The towns are trying to cut property taxes.
I understand. The fifth policy piece is that the five-year goal would be to be able to provide a full report that would show the comparative analysis between these indicators. And after 5 years, we do expect to start seeing some trends as they relate to statewide changes. So that's the five-year outlook, is that that would be the first time, not the first time, but an appropriate time possibly to take a look at any of these initial trends for the council to consider as we continue to make land use decisions.
Ross, could you clarify that for me? You're saying up until the five-year point, this is just nice-to-know information, but we really shouldn't be drawing any conclusions from it. It's not conclusive. What do you...
I think the first few years, this will be ongoing, and at the end of 5 years, it may require further discussion or statements that how are we doing? We probably won't know next year in some instances and some indicators. Some we will. But the five-year piece is consistent with the other components here. And so in 5 years, we'll be doing the same thing other than it will be the
5 years out.
5 years out. But in the next 5 years, annually, we expect to be able to provide a similar report.
Let me ask. I mean, one of the things that I envision, at least as a possibility, is to look at your transaction data and have us ask the staff, well, tell us if farmland has gone down by X or non-farmland has gone down by Y in the preservation or planning area. I think we probably ought to be asking you that to fulfill the obligation that confronts us in 11 A1 B 2A, the cost of implementing the regional master plan. At least theoretically, one of the costs could be, you know, these things that are in place have hit land values, stuff the governor was talking about, and you would need X, Y, and Z from the federal government or the state funds that are available in terms of compensating landholders. I don't see that as a five-year thing. Do you? Is that what you were saying?
Well, the transactions piece is there's a lot of information to mine from the transactions. One is the level of number or the number of transactions as a whole. How is the dynamic of that region reacting? The second thing would be, yes, this property was sold. The assessed value was, the improvement value was this, and it was sold for that. This gentleman here is you know, kind of been doing that for a couple of years as property tax stabilization comes to us and says, well, we've decided to provide this type of compensation for properties that have lost land. We think vacant land's lost 90%. Well, it wasn't very long. It wasn't difficult to have Anthony take a look at the SR1A reports, take a look at how many transactions of vacant land in that county took place and what its relationship was to the vacant land assessed value. And it was 331% over the assessed value on average for those small number of transactions, nine. So that's the type of information that we will continue to work on, and just not periodically. I think the exercise that you discussed right now is something we should generally be looking at aggregating as soon as we get, you know, this approved, and then as we finish this, that's one of the first things on land value transactions. That's one thing.
If I can just say that, but that's what we're doing.
Just
a simple suggestion. It's probably worth saying.
Right. Well, this is a tool for the council and for the constituents and municipalities to say, wait, what about this? And that's why really this started with 73 economic indicators that we received from a contract with Vertices that went out and quality assured a level of this information. We asked for 73 indicators that even if we don't use them now, it's good to have. And planners can use some of the housing density data that's in there. Transportation can use some of that transportation.
I'm a little more focused than that, though, Ross, on this transaction and land.
If I can just make one comment on the transactions. The SR1A data, the data that we have, and this is some limitation that I guess we face ubiquitously as we proceed, but the data has its limitations. The SR1A data measures sales transactions by property class, by block and lot. Problem is, while some towns might have sufficient data to draw some sort of conclusion, other towns have very limited data, and to look at a couple of years and a couple of transactions or a couple of sales that took place in vacant land or farm, it's very difficult to draw some sort of a broad conclusion as to how that land might have been adversely affected. So different variables will have to be looked at differently, but this is one that I think that to date, even if we do go back as far as 2002, because of the data limitations, I think it's very important that we continue to track this the sales data, SR1A data, but you know, to make any sort of broad conclusions at this point, I think it's too early.
Well, I do too at this point, but what I'm saying is you ought to articulate in here, I think, that in 2007 or March of 2008, or some range of time, it's our expectation that we will report out a view. Could be the view continues to be, it's way too early to tell. On the other hand, if you have a piece of property that sold in 2001 and the same piece of property sells in 2005 in the planning area, you've got some data points that are I agree with you, two is better than one, 20 is better than two. But that's a very powerful indicator, and potentially. So you ought to be monitoring this against a plan to, I think, come back and talk to us or have us talk to each other about the requirement, the cost of implementing the regional master plan.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I'm glad to hear Anthony, what you said, that's exactly what I would have wanted you to say, to make an accurate assessment of what the data means and what conclusions we should draw from it. Because my fear is that we're going to draw improper conclusions. We've already made some statements, so I don't think we really have the data to back that up and say it. And my other point is regarding this, some statement that was made about sale price, average sale price relative to assessed value. Well, a lot of vacant properties in this area are going to be farmland assessed. So, of course, the sales price is going to be way higher than the assessed value.
In that instance.
But not necessarily than the equalized value. That should kind of make a little bit.
It helps, but there's also a very large body of data with acquisitions from Green Acres, where there's and SADC, where there's many, many transactions that have taken place since 1990, and 330-some-odd properties in Green Acres and 200-some-odd farmland. So when we equalize that through the Consumer Price Index to adjust for inflation, you start getting an idea of what that per acre value was. And then as we continue tracking this, through as we'll get to MOUs and the like with Green Acres, and that'll also start building on this. So, as Council Member Salavera states, we can start building this data. There's nothing more important than the large lot effects to farmers and the large lot owners in terms of land value. So we can get going on that. We'll make the changes to the policy paper and implement it.
A second, what Michael said. I think we're already confronted, and people have spoken to the council and us individually, with an individual land sale that they believe was affected significantly by the Highland Tide. So the more this could clarify expectations of when people start saying to us, this is an impact of the ad, to say, we need more data points, or at the dates when we think we'll have more significant data, that's helpful. I mean, I know it's hard to predict, but.
Sure.
Ross, I would like to suggest that we collect data, property tax data, not only on household or residential properties, but on commercial properties as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as a town goes through its a revaluation, you might see a very large shift or change in the tax amount, and it isn't because the property has really changed. It's because what we have been finding lately is because residential properties have been increasing in value much more than commercial properties. We've had these shifts, so that whereas a town used to, get 50-some percent, more than 50% from its commercial people and the rest from residential, it's gone the other way. So if you don't have that commercial piece there that would show you the offset, you might draw invalid conclusions by just seeing a leap in residential taxes. You don't see an offset on the commercial side, and it would just prove that it was an assessment problem, but not a real change in value.
Or a recalibration of the land use contributions. Equalized property values and transactions, we do break down residential, commercial, industrial, and other.
Yeah.
So it does, and it is interesting, and farmland. So it starts really showing the changes from 1990 to 2004, where residential really picking up, farmland really increased. And so it's not only interesting, but it's informed. And you start seeing commercial stay, they're up high single percentages points when farmland from 1990 is up in the hundreds. So the sixth piece would be that we would look at establishing MOUs and data sharing agreements with the coordination consistency piece, Division of Taxation, Department of Community Affairs, so that we can rely on timely and data that comes to us. in a time frame that we can all agree on. Right now, as I said, taxation, they require an OPR request, and that's taking some time. And so that went out before the summer. And so we're waiting for the SR1A data, knowing that there's been a lot of these transactions that would help inform what are those true effects to what's happening in the marketplace. So those MOUs.
So we filed an OPR request to get that?
Well, what they said is we can't just give you this information anymore, Ross. We do ask you to go. We ask everybody who gets data from us to submit an OPR request. So I wrote and I just sent the email saying, well, what does that entail? What do you need? Can you consider this as the OPR request? Yes, we think so. We'll get back to you. And this was
what agency?
Of Division taxation. Of Taxation well, and to the Treasury.
Well, let me say, I hadn't heard that one. That maybe if we can forego discussion on that, I'll tell you, I will certainly figure out what's going on there. We ought not to need to file an OPR request. But on the overall concept, yes. Right, we agree we should have better coordination than that.
Are they going to charge us for the information?
No, not well, I don't have the information yet, so who knows? But that's the thing, that we should start.
We can share something with the media now.
I'm confident that this is what we'll get over quickly, and if you're good with us coordinating generally, I guess that only shows the point that coordination is necessary.
We don't have it in the budget for paying.
I knew you would say that, so we will act accordingly.
I believe that's my line, too.
Litigation budget would get taken out.
The litigation budget we will need.
And then number 7 is develop programs to assist municipality county officials on tracking reporting regional economic indicators through the municipal economic tracking program and continue to track and monitor these indicators. That's the plan going forward. Just based on this conversation, we've got quite a few revisions to make here, and I'll work with Dante and get this and make the appropriate changes.
What's the price tag?
It was $10,000 to get all of these 73 data sets, but after that...
I'm talking about the regional master plan price tag. We implement this regional master plan.
You have to stay tuned for the...
What's the cost of compensation and acquisition? I mean, should we get our grips on that number?
The cash.
The governor needs that number.
Yeah, all right. That's not in the baseline, but that is coming as part of Ross's subsequent presentation.
The cash flow timetable starts to take like a planning grants cost for towns to change their regional master plans and update their zoning and fill that in. Acquisition, property tax stabilization measures, as well as state aid municipal programs. And then the fiscal impact analysis gets into more of that academic. What's it cost in terms of infrastructure and hard costs and trying to put metrics on softer, more lifestyle type components?
Very soon.
Very soon, is that?
Yes, very soon we'll get you there.
Any other comments or questions?
I know you want this.
Thank you. And I know, John, did we forget to formally introduce Anthony Cortese, who is on our planning staff and who's has been helping Ross on the financial information?
I think Ross just said he was a gentleman.
Yeah. Well, so it didn't throw anyone off. I figured I'd introduce him.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you. So there's one minor issue left. Wait for you to leave.
Really? Why wouldn't we
say the best last?
I would have liked to finish with scenic vistas.
We're building on our success, Mimi, so this will go easily.
We do have a hard time with the trial.
Please,
but early dismissal if we're well behaved.
Yeah, we can start the public comment period earlier if we're.
Well, John, to present this issue, we have Steve Valzano, but also Aaron Lynham, who is one of our resource management specialists, who is title for our scientists, folks. So Aaron is doing a great job putting this together. So take it away.
And before you go through this, what are the three categories again? Because this keeps referring to them, and they're terms that we've made up. We've created. and find them somewhat confusing.
Three categories.
The overlay zones, you're talking about?
What are the three categories of land? There's the growth, there's
the regional protection area, which is high resource value, high constraints on development.
Resource protection, conservation, and
development.
Regional protection.
Development is the last one. So in order.
Protection, conservation, and development. Got it.
Wastewater utility, this is our first introduction to the economic growth, smart growth component of the plan. Essentially gets to the issue is how do we identify where development activities are appropriate and establish appropriate capacity limitations on that growth to ensure that we're living within existing capacity limitations, that land use development opportunities are consistent with those limitations. So this has been an extraordinarily difficult task to compile all the information, check all the information that goes into an understanding of where sewer services are, what areas are currently served by sewer, and what the appropriate capacity limitations are. It is an ongoing process, and we will continue to report out to the council as this is developed. But generally, the policies relate to identifying, establishing those capacity limitations and identifying areas that are most suited to provide sewer service, and as such, most suited to provide growth opportunities moving forward. We, as policy number one, have designated what we call Highlands domestic sewer facilities, and those are a subset. There are many wastewater treatment facilities in the region. Most are designed to accommodate an individual project, and as such, they do not have the capacity or the approvals necessary to serve anything but that project. So what we've intentionally done is select those treatment facilities in the Highlands region that are designed, constructed, and have the intended purpose to provide domestic wastewater treatment to municipalities or to a larger development area. We call those collectively our Highlands domestic sewer facilities, and those are facilities that can accommodate future growth. Also within that, we are defining areas within the plan that we constitute existing areas served. And that's essentially based on the best available information where we know the pipes are in the ground. Both those are very important because we are recognizing that only regional facilities can service growth in the context of the regional master plan, and that existing areas served are very important to identify areas of concentrated growth to help inform where regional growth areas may occur.
Are all facilities mapped, not just the Highlands domestic sewer facilities? Are all package plans?
We have
septics, but at least designate areas served by septic.
Yes, we have a comprehensive inventory of all wastewater discharge facilities, both industrial and domestic, and then we have this subset. Most of our energy has been devoted to working with that within that subset, what we define as the Highlands domestic sewer
discharge.
It includes both ground and surface water discharges, and it ranges in size from facilities that have 20,000 gallons of capacity upwards of 12 million gallons of capacity. So it covers quite a large range.
My question now is possibly premature, but I'd like to ask you and have you satisfied, because I couldn't find it in the document.
Sure.
We are aware, we have been made aware of a couple of large developments that wherein, Tom, you're familiar with one in particular, where sewer service had been begun. And another where sewer service is urgently needed, large developments, often around a lake, for example, mm-hmm. where the septics have failed. Is there a provision in what we are doing here to accommodate those emergency situations?
Yeah, they're... one of the recommendations is when we, as we get into this, when we recommend areas that should be served based upon the limitations of capacity, one of the concerns is to address where there are prevalence of failing septic systems and where there are wet water impacts or public health concerns associated with those failing septic systems. And the staff would recommend that those areas be provided a priority when there is available capacity, so that those areas that represent a public health concern are treated first and the capacity is dedicated to service those areas. There is the need, moving forward during conformance, to constantly update and refine this database, because real estate development is a moving target, and as we continue to develop the plan, there continues to be development and commitments of sewer capacity that happen every day that are that will require constant maintenance of a database, because they will change, and as a result, those change land use decisions or capacity decisions, capacity estimates. So those provisions are both in here, and if need be, we could provide clarification to ensure those are addressed adequately. Available wastewater treatment capacity. We are providing in our regional master plan a conservative estimate of capacity. That is the amount of wastewater treatment capacity that is currently available when one excludes the existing uses from what we call the permitted flows. Now, there are two concerns with that, or two issues with that. One is to provide a conservative estimate. We are using a value called maximum three-month average. As we talk about water availability, we're always talking low flows, because you want to make sure there's enough water available during the driest period of time. Well, wastewater is the reverse. When you plan capacity, you want to plan at the highest flow, flows peak and valley throughout the year and from year to year. But you want to make sure when you establish capacity limits that you're planning for the highest flow rate, because it's at that period of time and plants go exceed their capacity and go into non-conformance. So that's the recommendation that staff is providing. There's also the issue and an ongoing discussion that we're having with DEP that there are some instances where permit capacity will not be achieved by a facility. Even though they have a permit that allows for a certain flow, there are certain limitations in terms of their the quality of the receiving water. For example, if what's called a TMDL, a total maximum daily load, is applied to a stream, that puts additional treatment requirements on a facility. If that facility doesn't have the ability to treat to that standard, they may not be able to achieve their permitted flow. So there are issues in facilities which is still ongoing, we're still reviewing, that will not have the ability to achieve that full available capacity.
Are you trying to specifically identify the plants that have those types of constraints?
Yes, we are.
Before you move on, are you ready to move on?
Not yet.
Great, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Finish.
No, I was going to move on. You're
going to move on. Okay, three-month average you referred to?
That's maximum three-month average.
Maximum three-month period, going back how far?
It's between the period of 2002 to 2004, so it takes the highest consecutive 3 months.
Period.
During that two-year period.
Okay, you looked at it too. Some engineers argue you should just look at the maximum monthly flow during that period, and not do the three-month average.
Yeah, it's actually, and then there's an alternative argument that says we should do what's called the three-month roving average, which is a lower number. So we felt that this was a reasonable estimate of what that peak flow of what a high flow would look like, not the absolute peak.
Well, Steve, you know that those high flows may be really misleading, because they could be caused because you could have a lot of rain.
Yeah.
And I infiltration.
Yes.
In these treatment facilities is very, very common. And so it distorts the amount. It's really not wastewater. It's
yeah, but
just
it's counted towards the facility's
rain.
Discharge.
Yes.
Well, but it's just that it's going right through.
Yeah.
It's perfectly clean water.
But it's counted towards the discharge.
And if the municipality were to go in, as many of them will do when they have the money available, they go in and repair these, and it drops.
Yeah. And we're going to actively promote to the council a concept of fix it first. And what we would suggest is that the best place to invest public dollars for infrastructure repair is to reduce what is known as inflow and infiltration, because that does substantially cut down on capacity and then as a result limit growth potential where growth could otherwise be accommodated.
My
last question is, where have you accounted for in looking at actual flows? We're trying to get an estimate of available capacity, but what about capacity that's already been allocated that isn't online yet?
Right.
Yeah, the issue of allocated capacity is a very difficult one. It is not necessarily publicly available in all instances, so it is virtually impossible to accurately account for that without requiring submissions as part of some approval process. So what we are proposing in order to account for allocations is a municipality or an authority must submit a full accounting of all their outstanding commitments or allocations so that we have a more thorough understanding of not only what's been contractually obligated, but to who.
But then
because
our estimates of available capacity might be too high.
Correct.
We should be acknowledging that somehow.
Right. What we are basing the plan on is what is available, and we are essentially establishing what's called a rebuttable presumption opportunity, where a municipality can say, "Well, no, that might be our available capacity, but we have a commitment here, we have a commitment there." And that through municipal conformance, the council can review the extent of service area recommended in the plan to make those adjustments as appropriate. In some cases, those will already have been captured within what's recommended in the RMP. In some cases, there may be need to be adjustments, either add sites because of the outstanding contractual obligations, and it's included in here. Or modify the shape of a service area, but it will all have to be reviewed in context of the resource protection standards.
How many wastewater treatment facilities are there in the Highlands, Steve?
That we're focusing on
right.
Is 41.
Wouldn't it be possible to somehow contact all of them and ask them what their outstanding obligations are?
We have.
And have you gotten responses?
Well, it's all. generally, what happens is a utility authority provides utility service to multiple municipalities. They contract
yes.
out capacity to the municipalities. The municipalities allocate resources or available capacity to individual property owners. Generally, there is not a good record of what those outstanding allocations are, and there is no consistent source of information to document those. We have started documenting those in terms of to the extent of how much and where, but it is very incomplete. And
yeah, but
require.
A lot of them have an obligation to another community, right?
The authority, yeah.
I mean, a lot of wastewater facilities were obligated to provide treatment to neighboring towns.
Yeah. In most cases, all
and
of...
And so that's
yeah.
what you need to find out, yeah. how much of that capacity that's committed is still available.
Yeah. Well, in most cases, all of the capacity at a facility is contracted to municipalities. So it is all contracted, but
right.
not all used.
Right.
And then the question is, where does the council feel that that could be best used to both encourage growth within areas that can accommodate growth and encourage growth at a density that most or at a use that most promotes smart growth principles that are consistent with the plan?
Except that some of those contracted towns are not in the Highlands region.
Correct, and we've made the adjustments for that.
So you have some sewer that's already set service areas in both?
Yes.
Plan.
Yeah, and we made adjustments for that based upon a pro rata distribution of what the permitted flow is.
So we're going to say we're blind to the line, but we're going to say you, town, you can expand even though you have the same sewer plan as you. You, town, you cannot.
Well, not necessarily. If a multiple towns are served by the same facility, and we have information on allocate on how those flows are committed, we're considering those. But generally, we're distributing the flow based upon the area that was envisioned to be served by that authority. And then, in distributing that, depending on how much of the municipality is within the service area, they would be allocated a pro rata share
of that available capacity. Which would be based on what, like the town's master plan?
Well, no, it's actually based on the service areas that were identified are based upon, mutual expectation, I'll say, of both the authority and the municipality. In some cases, the municipalities paid for upgrades of the treatment plants and defined areas that they wanted to serve, and then contracted out or paid for a portion of the expansion of the plant and contracted out that capacity. In some cases, the service areas will be able to be served. In some cases, they can't. In some cases, the development expectation is within that capacity. In some cases, it's well in excess of what their available capacity is. So it covers all variables.
And let me just support what Steve's saying. The data, the information is just not there.
No.
And it's some municipalities protected. Yeah. And you can't open something if there's no document.
Some can get hurt financially, right?
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, yes. We have to recognize, and there are provisions in this, that there are contractual obligations. And some of those contractual obligations are tied to development approvals. Some of those development approvals may be 20 years old. And the town may not have a good understanding of what their own outstanding obligations are. That's going to require a long, deliberate due diligence process on our part so that we can acquire the necessary documents from the municipality, ensure that we have an understanding of what those are, have the ability to make adjustments during conformance, because we don't want to get into a situation where we're creating a lose-lose situation for a municipality where they can't comply because they have outstanding legal obligations, and at the same point in time, we want to make sure that those legal obligations are reasonably achievable. You know, if they've committed to a project that clearly can't be built because the entire project is a wetland, but there's still an outstanding contractual obligation, that's a consideration for the council.
Yeah. What about the fact that DEP, in many instances, even though a plant has a permanent flow, they don't enforce the flow?
Yeah, it's,
and as long as you meet your permit requirements for the certain parameters in your permit, they allow flow to be violated. So how have you managed to work that out?
Because we are providing a conservative estimate. We are not the regulatory body charged with monitoring conformance with discharge permits for sewage treatment plants. What we are trying to do is to ensure that the area intended to be served and the zoning or the build development potential within that area is consistent with that capacity. So if this worked well, there would never be a situation where that would occur, where the plan would have discharged.
I'm not so much worried about the impacts of that. I just mean in terms of how it messes up your analysis, because if they're not requiring flow to be the limit.
But the flow is a permit condition. It's just not an enforceable permit condition.
But they allow them then to add flow as long as they meet their permit requirements. So that screws up our assessment in terms of capacity.
No, it doesn't, because we're looking at what the volume of wastewater treatment the facility is permitted to treat, and we're looking at what the current discharge flows are. We aren't looking at whether or not DEP is enforcing those flows in accordance with permit requirements. We're just comparing the two values, million gallons per day, between what they're allowed to do, permitted, and what they're currently discharging.
Okay, so it's, I know Tom knows what I'm talking about. I know you do too, but this specific problem, as long as the volume is it is
based upon their permit limit for their flow.
No matter
even
what,
though DEP isn't enforcing that as a violation.
But even though we're looking at the 3-month maximum now.
Yeah, well, let me give you an example. Based upon the 3-month maximum, there are certain facilities that currently exceed their permitted flow. And as such, the recommendation would be that those areas served no longer have this development potential to be served by sewer. They still maybe have development potential, but at a density that could be served by septic systems. So we know that already.
Okay. And it doesn't mess up you using the maximum 3-month. Average.
It actually, what it does is because it's more conservative, it will put them over their permitted flow sooner than if we were to use the 3-month roving, which would be a lower number, and it would take. It's conservative in the sense that we know facilities that have a problem before they might necessarily experience a permit violation. And what we don't want to do is encourage growth in those areas, which will be unachievable.
And wouldn't it be more careful to use in that, considering this, the high flow there, not an average at all?
Yeah, the issue of I&I creates difficulties in that the high flow may peak at periods, it may just be a daily event. We went through extensive discussions internally and feel that the 3-month maximum is both conservative and reasonable. So that is the value that we're recommending that we use as an indicator. It's reasonable. If we use the peaks and that they don't have a flow limit, I&I can be addressed. We are looking at I&I.
Right.
But I&I can be addressed.
And then we'll discuss I&I later.
Yeah.
But
why don't you move on to another policy? That's
yeah.
Okay. So
when will we settle that issue as to what becomes the policy?
In terms of what
the
parameters are being used?
Yeah, what parameters?
We're recommending that to council today. So.
Well, can you show us the difference, perhaps, in a follow-up report? What is the difference between looking at it from the peak flow month to the maximum 3-month? Average.
Sure.
I mean, that might at least inform us a little bit about how big a difference it is.
But if you're an operator of a facility and you exceed your permit capacity, you're subject to a fine.
They actually took that out of the enforcement as an enforceable limit.
As long as you meet your effluent limits.
So as long as you meet your
effluent limits.
Yeah.
But we are basing the planning decision based upon the permitted flow, even if it's not enforceable.
What you said about exceeding flows and not enforcing it, is that what you're relating
to?
That's just a mandatory penalty issue that DEP decided to change.
Right. Based on the lawsuit, I think.
No, based upon the Clean Water Enforcement Act, which triggered mandatory penalties.
Too many violations.
That's right.
Right.
Because of the violence.
So you don't enforce it. How simple.
Yeah.
Well, they do enforce pollution, so that's in their defense.
Wastewater treatment plants eat money.
Yeah. Item number three. One of the policy recommendations we are making to council is to utilize or plan to allow for up to 20% of the available capacity to go towards redevelopment activities, to encourage that there is to allow opportunities for sufficient brownfield redevelopment rather than greenfields development. So we feel that it is consistent with the requirements of the Act, consistent with the smart growth principles and goals in the Act, to encourage redevelopment where redevelopment opportunities exist. We feel this is appropriate to ensure that local planning allows for opportunities as a priority to redevelop previously developed areas. The basis for the 20% is actually what we utilized what's the the point at which a facility triggers what's called capacity assurance, which is 80% of the plant's capacity, before they have to review and determine or demonstrate to the satisfaction of the department that they have adequate capacity to service their future needs without exceeding their permit thresholds. So we feel at that point in time, as a facility enters into capacity assurance, that one of the demonstrations that should be provided is that there is adequate available capacity to service redevelopment. And that is the basis of the
20%. But it's 20% of...
It's 20% of the available capacity. So
that's not what this said, though. 20% of existing maximum 3-month demands.
I'm sorry, 20% of the existing use. 20% of the existing
use. But what if there's zero available capacity?
Then they have no redevelopment capacity available. It's up to.
Up to.
Yeah, so if a facility...
up to.
Yeah, if a facility has no available capacity, it is at capacity. If a facility has available capacity, then up to 20% of the existing use is allocated to redevelopment. In some cases, facilities don't have that 20%. So they have no growth potential beyond the existing area served. And we use that to inform where growth may be accommodated in the regional master plan. If they have more than 20% of the existing use available, then they have potential for growth beyond existing area of development.
Steve, you talked about potential for growth, but you've also talked about redevelopment. And I thought redevelopment was driving this.
Yes, it is.
Shouldn't we look and see, or maybe have, for these 41 was the number?
Yes.
41 facilities, which ones we think have redevelopment possibilities?
Yeah, we know that.
Okay, and it's all of them?
Yeah, we are allowing up to 20% redevelopment. It is assumed that all existing developed areas have redevelopment potential in the context of expansion of existing uses, infill development, and adopt the reuse of existing development.
You said it's assumed.
Yes.
It's assumed because we've looked, or it's just an absolute no-brainer? You don't even have to say we assume. It's just absolutely clear. Here's what I'm getting. Yes. I would have said to you, look, we could start with redevelopment first, if that's what's driving this, and ask where are the redevelopment opportunities, and then say, if you have a redevelopment opportunity, then this kicks in. And instead, we've said this kicks in, and we're going to see if you have a redevelopment opportunity. It seems to me that might sort of create some pressures to find some redevelopment possibilities where we wouldn't otherwise think there ought to be any.
Yeah, I believe the intent of that is to encourage municipalities to look for redevelopment opportunities, provide opportunities for mixed use, more efficient use of existing developed lands as a method of promoting economic growth locally without requiring consumption of additional land base.
I hear that, but I think it ought to be incumbent on us. I think we're called upon by the Act to make that redevelopment assessment ourselves and then drive the plan forward on that basis.
We could take a look at that.
Because I understand you're proposing that we would reserve 20% of whatever capacity is available for redevelopment, right?
20% of the existing use for redevelopment use as a priority, yes.
If you're at 80% of capacity, you've got a shot at using the rest of your capacity.
Right. Only for redevelopment, or your redevelopment comes first.
No, 20% of your available capacity.
20% of 3-month demand.
Right. Different numbers here.
If you have, for reasons of simplicity, if you are at 80% of your available capacity, or 80% of your permitted flow, then the Highlands Council, the Regional Master Plan would assume that that remaining capacity would be available for redevelopment, infill development, and adaptive reuse of existing developed area. The implication of that is that area served does not have regional growth potential. It might still be a, and would be encouraged to be, a specially planned area, but it would not have regional growth capacity or capability. Regional growth expands the area of development or encourages development outside the areas currently developed.
So when you're referring to growth, as you did, you're not talking about expanding that existing area.
Yeah.
Is that what you're looking at, Michael? The conflict between the terms of redevelopment and growth?
Well, what I was really saying is it sounds like if somebody is not at their full capacity, you're saying they can use chunk of their unused capacity for redevelopment.
Yes.
And I would have just turned it around and asked the question first, do we think that this sewer facility is in an area where redevelopment ought to take place? It may be that you can look at your list of 41 tomorrow and say to yourselves and to us, boy, it's obvious all of these people fit that criteria. But if there are two of them that don't, or 39 that don't, then it seems to me we ought to turn this around and say the first question is, do we think this is apt for, quote, redevelopment, end quote? And then if it is, and you have excess capacity, you can use it.
Yeah, what's the driver in this analysis? Available capacity, so it's a redevelopment area, or appears because of a lack of environmental constraints to be appropriate for growth?
No, the driver is a policy determination by council, in which the regional master plan will encourage brownfields and grayfields development over greenfields development. Or, in other words, that the council wants to encourage more efficient use of previously developed land rather than encourage development on land that has not been previously developed.
Can we break those down as policy goals?
Sure.
And I agree with them. I think that they are probably indicated by the Act.
Right.
Yep. But I think your point, Debbie, is a good one, that you just used, you described different types of development and growth, and you capitalized them in the way you said it. So you basically said regional growth is a type of growth that uses currently undeveloped land and expands the geography of growth. There's redevelopment, which might be adapted reuse of a site or just simply a change in use. And then we have a technical term about redevelopment, which is 70% coverage, you know, existing IC or a brownfield site. So if we have different policy goals and the types of growth we're trying to promote, mm-hmm. and we're going to address them differently, either facilitate them or restrict them differently, we probably ought to be specific about what we're trying to do.
And we should be very precise when we use the word growth.
Right.
Does that mean additional development within today's zoning? Or today's zoning, what by this plan we're identifying as on top of that? When and we say additional, or you know, again, additional growth versus today or versus existing zoning.
And that definition, when we finally arrive at those differences, should be throughout the entire RMP.
Yes.
Yes.
I think they're already there. Yeah. If you look at existing areas served and redevelopment treatment capacity, those were an attempt to get at those issues.
I read it. I was a little, whether we did it now or later, yeah. I wanted to make that point.
Should I make an assumption or a guess that when we were looking at that list, if you had that list in front of you, of the 41 sites, you'd find that in a lot of maybe your older towns that are kind of reaching a build-out situation is where you have the older infrastructures, thus the plants that are at capacity, and thus we need to figure out a way to find a way. They're very easily thought of as redevelopment opportunities. And without naming towns, that's what we'd all kind of nod our head and say, oh, okay, this makes a lot of sense. It's kind of what I'm reading between the lines.
Yes.
How many of these 41 facilities are new?
They're all
10 years or older.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, these are all well-established developed areas.
You probably even have them approaching 70, 80 years old.
They were built when the federal government was handing out money to towns to build them.
And they might have been reconstructed, expanded over the years, but many of them have a long history.
WPA?
I'd second Tim's point, just that I think, and I agree with what you're saying, but it's not as clear written down as is what you're saying.
We will refine the language to distinguish between growth within a specially planned area that encourages redevelopment from growth within a regional growth area that includes greenfields or development on undeveloped areas.
Yeah, but I guess I'm asking for something different, which is I'd like you to specifically say the council's policy is
yes.
to promote redevelopment, more efficient use in established communities, right. whatever the language might be, so that we're clear that that's the policy goal, that we're then structuring sewer policies and land use restrictions around.
We can.
I mean, if you look at page, if you look at page 8, see if that language is that's right from the act. We can take that, which is the last bullet on page 8. Encourage growth and go to the middle of it, adjacent to areas already utilized. This is really getting at the issue we're driving at.
That's very important. I said before, clarity begins at home.
Put that in there.
Right. Somebody running this.
Yeah,
no,
it's really good. You're so right. Let me ask you something, Steve. Let's say that a facility has 40% capacity by virtue of your calculations and data. 20% will say, okay, we're going to hold that for redevelopment, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got 20% left. And let's say that according to the town's current zoning, they're built out. So mm-hmm. there's 20% excess there. Now, would we then declare that as an area for increased growth?
If there...
Above and beyond the existing zoning?
If there is land that's available that is not constrained and otherwise appropriate for development, the council may decide to recommend expanding a service area to capture that additional area if that capacity is available, yes.
But that's up to the town.
What's that?
The town, we would not, I mean,
the
she's saying if it's zoned conservation by the town. Whatever.
The policy of the council has previously been that there is no mandatory growth provisions.
Right.
So anything that would stimulate, encourage, or require growth would it be a discretionary element of plan conformance?
Right.
So we might recommend and encourage.
We are required to recommend
yes.
some areas.
Yes.
So that then would qualify, at least from that standpoint of wastewater capacity, it would qualify for increased growth.
It would have the ability to support increased
yes,
growth.
But not mandated.
Correct.
And we wouldn't mandate it, though.
Isn't the technical paper that we have that has that wastewater treatment utility infrastructure capacity has a lot of the information.
No, that was really good.
And it has the
it's
list of
like
all
that.
The various utilities and how much capacity is in it. It's all in here.
Yes.
That's available online.
Yeah, yes. And we can, if you'd like, okay. illustrate some of this, but I'm avoiding going to the screen in the interest of getting out of your tent. But if you'd like,
not
we can. Under item number 3, in terms of policy recommendation, one of the other objectives we're trying to achieve is to ensure that there's sufficient capacity to accommodate TDR receiving areas at a density that allows a town, should they want to act as a TDR receiving area, of prioritizing capacity to those TDR receiving areas. At a density that generates demand for TDR credits. Item number 4, Highlands Wastewater Sewer Service Areas. This is the acknowledgement that the plan will recommend what, based upon areas that are deemed appropriate for development or redevelopment within the capacity limitations that should be served by sewer. So, Mimi, this sort of gets to your issue, which is that if there is an area that doesn't have sewer but there's excess capacity and it has all the indications of being appropriate for growth, it doesn't have constraints, it has low resource value, that the plan would recommend that area to be served at the discretion of the municipality.
So you're defining that as simply as future areas, not necessarily existing areas served plus potential growth.
Correct. This is, well, no, this is, This is all the growth area that the plan determines to be appropriate to be served by sewer. And that we feel it would be very advantageous for the plan, to the extent that we can get there, to define what that area is. Because if we're trying to encourage or to inform a town where they should plan to provide sewer within their capacity, that's consistent with the plan, this will help us get there.
Right, I agree with you that you ought to identify the appropriate areas for future extension of services.
Yeah.
But then I'm just thinking about the other goals that you talk about later on, which are fixing I&I or more intensive reuse of lands. That sounds to me, that argues for drawing the boundary larger. When you think about sewer service areas now, they are both pipes in the ground plus future expansion areas.
Yes.
And I'm kind of looking for a way to collapse some of this stuff, because I think if you get too many different categories, it's going to get confusing in terms of a lot of different aspects. But if the management approaches that you're going to apply later on deal with some issues that are associated with existing pipes and existing service areas, then maybe it makes more sense to define them all together. Yeah. After you've parsed out the ones for future growth.
Envision an area, a service area, that comes out of the plan that's a proposed service area. There are three elements to that. One is the existing area served. The other is the area that can be served and should be served within existing capacity. And the third are areas that are otherwise appropriate for development but may exceed the available capacity. So they would be future.
Right. So when you look at a map, there's three different color categories on that map, or is there one category ringed by a outer boundary type?
There's actually going to be three. Okay.
Do you want to go to a...
What's that?
Do you want to show?
Would you like to see? It will take some time to work through. It's
no.
Okay.
We have substance to talk about. There
we go. Item number five gets to the point, your point, Tim. And in some cases, there is not sufficient capacity, but there is available land that is otherwise appropriate for development. Staff feels that it would be appropriate to identify those areas where they exist, to encourage or determine if there should be more capacity or if we can expand capacity. One, where should it go? Two, what is the projected capacity demand of that area, so we know what we're looking for.
Question.
Oh,
sorry.
I just want to ask a question. Is there anyone did you find that any town or any authority had just gone through an expansion prior to this and is really looking at a lot of overcapacity that we may want to know so that we're not really tying their hands and hurting them? Or are we not going to even ask that question and we don't care?
Well, we do care. there are some facilities whose existing delineated service area doesn't generate, in a build-out condition, doesn't use all the available capacity, so there's surplus.
By a little,
capacity.
By a lot.
What's that?
By a little, or by a lot.
In some cases, it's a lot, and what we're finding in those situations are there are unique circumstances. Like, one has an area, I think it was Jack that mentioned it, an area that has a lot of failing septic systems in lake communities. So there is a dedicated portion of that that's essentially being held in reserve to deal with that particular situation. Yes, and we want to encourage that. Right. So we're still looking, trying to determine how much of the available capacity has to be dedicated for that use, and then we'll revisit the numbers to determine if there's any surplus. In some cases, there is surplus. It's not massive. It's
not recent. We just went through a large expansion. What are you doing to us? We have, a tough situation here.
And there will be a requirement during conformance to provide flexibility and adjustments based on local concerns.
Question. In these new areas where new growth might go, are we going to be doing what I know we haven't done yet, because we don't have the data, but we're going to be looking at the assimilative capacity of those streams, or we're going to looking at the TMDLs, any kind of water quality limitations, upstream conditions, especially if it's out of state. Are we going to be doing a value assessment that stream before we start saying whether or not that area, could be served.
What we are currently doing is looking at the issue of, in cases of available capacity, how much capacity, or what are the issues regarding use of that capacity? Does a portion need to be dedicated for dealing with public health concerns? That's one. Two, we are looking at limitations of the receiving water that may prevent a facility from meeting its permit flow.
Mm-hmm.
And then
a new
third,
facility we're
what's
talking
that?
About now. We're talking about
an existing facility. Existing.
Okay.
But this
but
is
I'm
all
talking
based on
about
existing.
This. Well, go ahead. Maybe you can then get to this expansion area.
And then third, we are looking at indicators that suggest whether expansion of capacity is feasible.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if an existing wastewater facility discharges to a C1 stream, it is a relative certainty that there will never be a future expansion of capacity that is economically viable. If there's a TMDL attributed to the receiving waterway, there is a reasonable certainty that that expansion will not be economically feasible, and there's a concern whether or not they will ever be able to achieve permitted flow.
Mm-hmm.
If they discharge to a very large water body that doesn't have existing impairments and they're treating at a high level of quality, there might be an ability to expand. We are examining those to the extent that we will be able to report those in the regional master plan. We're still trying to do that.
I would just caution, we don't want to start identifying areas until that work is done.
That's true.
And to some extent, the council work will progress to a point of completion at a time when the plan has to be done. So, and to the extent that there are uncertainties and data gaps, we can identify those, and the council will have to make a decision whether or not we have enough information to proceed.
So we would then, in that case, I assume we would not identify an expansion area if we didn't have enough data to support it.
We might red flag a facility and zero out its available capacity, yes.
Okay. I'd rather go that way than the other way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have
one. Makes more sense.
We have one facility that is.
One in doubt, leave it out.
Exactly that situation. It has a lot of available capacity, but it's got a huge septic failure issue. So we're probably going to zero out its capacity and deal with that as an next step.
I get pulled awake this whole night.
Okay.
Steve, are there any of the 41 facilities that are pending expansion permits on any of them?
We are not looking at, we're limiting our analysis to existing capacity, not future expansions. I can't say offhand. I do not believe that there are proposals to expand capacity. What they are trying to do, one facility is trying to get some relief from their flow limits because they're meeting their effluent standards, but not expand the facility, just to get modifications to their permits.
There's one that's involved.
Yes.
Somewhere.
One idea.
You affect this.
We'll touch on it a little bit later on, but we should also look at, I think we should keep in mind the idea that servicing failed septic systems, particularly high concentrations like around Lake Mekong, is a resource protection policy as well, if not more so, than a growth policy.
Yes.
And to the extent that the way we structure the plan as to what becomes performance, doesn't become performance, where the priorities ought to be, I wasn't sure I heard you saying that we're basically going to require a reservation capacity to serve those areas. My concern is new development is priority over fixing old failed septic systems where the rate base is not quite as good. So if we allow those expansions to go forward, eating up new land or even new development, how do you solve that problem? And we have to face that part.
That's a good point, it's particularly if it's going to the same waterway, receiving waterway.
Yeah. Well, the same treatment plant.
Right.
Yeah, I think protecting waterways should have a higher priority even over redevelopment. If we need the trains.
Yes. Yes. So item number five is just the acknowledgement that there may be areas that are appropriate for redevelopment and or growth based upon their land use characteristics, but for which there is not sufficient capacity, and we will attempt to the extent that we can identify those areas in the plan. That would be the third zone, the third tier within that service area.
Where are you, Steve?
Item 5. Item 6, with regard to informing the land use capability map within the regional protection zone, the general recognition that there would be a prohibition on expansion of wastewater treatment collection systems beyond the existing areas served. This is a requirement under the preservation area in the Act. And that it also, however, acknowledges that there are going to be certain exceptions to that. Most notably is any project that has existing approvals and is exempt from the Act. And those will have to have the ability to accommodate moving forward.
Steve, is that what you just said? What falls into the special planned area category exemptions that are going to get built?
No, specially planned areas are redevelopment areas, previously developed areas that can accommodate redevelopment.
Well, we'll get there, but I don't understand why they are in the regional protection zone.
Because within the preservation area, there are there's ability to provide relief from strict adherence to the standards for areas that are appropriate for redevelopment. They are limited in their definition to include brownfields or sites or areas that have greater than 70% impervious area. So within some municipalities, particularly those municipalities that are wholly within the preservation area, those municipalities have the ability to seek redevelopment. The staff believes that we should accommodate, consistent with the resource protection goals, those redevelopment opportunities where they exist. And this allows for that to be accommodated. But keep in mind, the redevelopment area is greater than 70% impervious, which means it's a intensively previously developed area.
I agree. All the other layers of components or elements that define regional protection zone will be layered on top of this. Do you think there will actually be any special planned area?
Yes.
Within a regional protection zone?
Yes.
Because of urban, previous urban development?
Yes.
Then why aren't they just called redevelopment?
Thank you.
I don't understand why they're called special.
I remember what these new terms.
Because what we're talking about is an urban area, something already developed 70%. Why isn't that just a redevelopment area? Why is it called a specially planned area?
We are trying to separate ourselves from the term or the perception of the term redevelopment or areas that are appropriate for redevelopment, which gives the impression of eminent domain rights, and that's not what this intended to be. This is intended to be areas that the council identifies as being appropriate to accommodate redevelopment.
So it's our own word.
Right.
I mean, I see what the definition says in here in the glossary.
Yes.
But it's new, isn't it?
It's a term of art.
It's a term of art. Really,
it's a
and it is shown. It is shown as special here, but it has evolved to specially.
It may evolve tomorrow. That's the point.
I'm
going
over special, by the way.
It
does
keep coming up as being confusing. So I'm not sure what.
It was used by the Meadowlands when they did
it. Was.
Yeah. And we're trying. We are trying to use the term consistently now as much as possible, but specially planned areas are areas that are appropriate for redevelopment.
I think this is exactly right. This is what we should be doing. We're creating our own lexicon for the Highlands, which is Highlands-specific language.
Yes. There's great complexity in what we're doing, and there will be great complexity in the regional master plan, and part of what Tim said earlier is nurturing a change in not only perception but action on how we use land requires understanding. And if we can create a nomenclature and consistently use and reinforce that nomenclature, we can sort of hopefully encourage that change in attitudes. So it's hard. And we get hammered on it all the time. We will persist. item number 7, within the regional conservation zone, this is the middle ground. There are limited opportunities for expansion of wastewater collection systems within and immediately adjacent to existing areas served within the rural conservation zone, particularly those necessary to serve specially planned areas, or as may be necessary to address an imminent public health concern. There's also the policy recommendation that the staff would like to make in the situation where a landowner is interested in developing its property in a way that allows for at least 80% of that land area to be maintained in open space by essentially proposing a development that is of higher density, and the town is receptive to that proposal, that there would be the provision to allow for expansion to that of wastewater to that site to accommodate that development in the interest of preserving that land, providing that it's adjacent to the area served, and at least 80% of the project would be set aside.
And where is that? I don't see that.
That's item, second bullet item in number 7.
And maybe, but must be a TDR receiving area?
80%.
That actually is a, the goal here,
receiving area. No.
The goal, where this has its greatest merit is that we are going to identify resources that need to be preserved. There are a variety of methods to preserve those resources that don't require public fund expenditure. One of those is to encourage more efficient use of land and site design practices that allow the most sensitive resources on a site, be it farm productive agricultural soils, highlands open water protection area, critical habitat for endangered species, set those aside under conservation easements in exchange for allowing that developable portion of the site to be built at a higher density or at a comparable overall density to what would have been achieved through conventional design on the entire lot. So this is a way of encouraging or balancing or providing opportunities for balance where they're appropriate to accommodate growth but still achieve the resource protection goals without requiring public expenditures.
So we're giving a bonus, if you will.
Yes.
In exchange for most efficient land use.
Yes.
I have some concerns about this. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with your idea of trying to leverage private decision making, but I mean, first off, the Act says that the areas that we should identify as appropriate for future growth don't have characteristics that you identify being those that define the conservation area, right? So take Michael's, you know, undeveloped areas in the planning area which are not significantly constrained by environmental limitations, are not prime agricultural areas, and are located near or adjacent to existing development and infrastructure. So that policy may reflect the third criteria, but it seems to be contrary to the first two, which is that we shouldn't be identifying future growth areas. So neither should we plan for them in prime agricultural areas or environmental sensitive areas, nor should we allow sort of an application by application, even if it's a clustered development. And then I think there's just some pragmatic problems, which is, you know, sewers cost a lot of money to send out, and so you're going to have a fairly high intensity of use in order to justify doing that. And so whether or not that's appropriate in the regional conservation area is a question.
It's contiguous, though.
Yeah,
it's adjacent.
Well, adjacency, you know, what is it? Are we talking about just the parcels of land that are directly adjacent to the boundary between the regional growth area and the regional conservation area?
That's how I interpret it.
Or are we talking?
Okay.
Well, yes. That's not defined. First of all, the word adjacent is not in the document. But so that's maybe as we talk this through, it'll make a little more sense. But I just see the opportunity to send sewer lines out to clustered development. So you get a the classic leapfrogging of development. And while there may be a sort of sub-regional advantage to clustering it rather than spreading it out in 5-acre lots, you know, which I hope we're going to deal with in our other provisions, I don't know that that comports with the requirement to promote appropriate patterns of development, which is what the Act requires us to do. So, you know, I'll just flag that one as problematic from my perspective.
I think when this was envisioned and what it's intended to accomplish is only those parcels immediately adjacent to an existing area served. So only that situation where we're not talking about a significant extension of a sewer line. It would have immediate access to that sewer line and that and a portion of the site.
Then it needs to say that.
Yeah. So the from the previous bullet, the within and immediately adjacent to existing area served should be repeated in item number 2 as well.
But why wouldn't those areas then? Why wouldn't those areas be captured in your identification of the future expansion areas? Because the difference, it seems to me, is that you're talking about lands that have environmental limitations or prime agricultural areas.
Because right? In this case, we're acknowledging that up to 80% of that parcel is resource constrained. So when you look regionally, that land area will likely drop out as being more environmentally sensitive. But in reality, there may be a portion of that parcel that can accommodate a degree of development. And within conservation zones, we're going to allow low-density development so that there's limitations on accommodating that. But this is a way of really protecting the farmlands agricultural resources that would otherwise be developed at a low-density housing that can be preserved without requiring public investment of funds for acquisition by encouraging clustering, by giving a bonus, which is access to sewer.
Okay. Well, I think it runs contrary, the way I read it runs contrary to the specific direction of the Act, so I think there's a problem there. And I think it remains to be seen whether building small villages in the middle of farmland actually preserves the farmland or leads to all those conflicts that we hear about all the time. So, and I don't hear a compelling argument for this policy, the need for it in addition to the identification of those expansion areas and lands that are by default unconstrained.
Understood.
Would it be possible to get Tom to find that provision in the Act? I found it.
Well, I think we're talking about page 9. Under smart growth C, I think it's the one you're talking about, which are undeveloped areas in the planning area, which are not significantly constrained, right. Which are near or adjacent to existing development and infrastructure that could be developed.
Right, and the way 7 reads is, you know, you start off by saying that the regional conservation zone rationale includes significant agricultural areas and sensitive natural resources. Mm-hmm. And you know, you make the argument that significant expansion of sewer service would be contrary to the protection of those resources.
Well, but we're in the conservation zone, so not in the protection zone, so.
The rural conservation zone. Okay, well, here's a language issue then. What's the difference between a rural conservation zone and a regional conservation zone?
Regional includes resources, high-quality resources of regional significance. Conservation zone does not raise to that standard, but is neither a regional growth area. So that is...
You've got different language going on here.
Regional
protection zone, regional
protection areas include those lands that include significant resources.
Regional versus rural.
I'm sorry. I understand.
It's a curio because I know in the earlier documents
it's a typo.
Oh, it was first bullet.
Yeah, okay.
So there are two or there's only...
No, there's only regional conservation zone.
Okay, so we shouldn't have that rural.
That rural is
correct.
That's regional.
Correct.
Right, and so what I was saying, Tim, is on the section I was citing from the Act is that that's concerned of which are not significantly constrained. In other words, these are in the that provision of the Act is dealing with significant resources, and this section is dealing with resources which are in the medium zone, the conservation zone. And that's the policy issue.
Okay. Well, I guess the way I read the policy direction of the Act is to say, you know, when we're requiring the smart growth element to identify areas that are appropriate for future growth, can you read that language? And so the question is, how many resources are there, or how much agricultural land is there to qualify as an area that is a prime agricultural area or constrained by resources, right?
Yeah, I see.
But there's still going to be situations where within the regional conservation zone there are permissible development densities within sustainable limits. That sustainability may be driven by available water. It may be driven by the interest of protecting water quality. The council will have to decide to what extent in those situations, in the conservation zone, they want to encourage clustering to minimize the amount of land that's consumed to accommodate that same level of development. The difficulty is, within the conservation zone, the clustering will only be feasible where there is access to wastewater treatment. So
I agree with that. So you can have clustering, the reduction of lots. Chester Township, and Lynn used to talk about it all the time, has done it in several of these places on septic systems at densities which are supported by the appropriate dilution. And I think part of my issue is, you know, we're talking in the abstract, but, you know, you need to have some estimate of how intensive the development would have to be in order to justify sending sewers to it. And I guess my concern is that we establish this policy, someone leapfrogs out, setting aside the adjacency question for a second, and says, I'm going to cluster this. I'm going to cluster my 50 houses on 100 acres, and I want you to run a sewer line all the way out there. And is that the right policy we should be doing? And I think that's contrary to what the Act directs us to do.
But and recognizing that under this provision, that would result in 80% of the site being set aside in the conservation easement to protect the resources on that site, and that's the trade-off. Now
is that the only pathway to that land pattern? There could be mandatory clustering in the conservation area without sewers.
But you won't get 80% set aside as open space.
Why not?
It's just not achievable. You're not going to be able to get the density.
Instead of access to.
You won't get the density that you could fit and as of right yield on 20% of the land area. And accommodated
on. That's a specific question that you need to show us.
Is this the policy area section of the plan where these questions are going to be resolved by us, or are they going to be?
It's not. This is not a time-sensitive issue. We're going to get into a lot of these detailed issues with regard to how do you want to apply this. This doesn't affect any development of the plan, so we could table it for now and revisit it when we have more information that could identify where maybe these areas occur, and then revisit it or consider it again.
When in doubt, leave it out.
Yes. Okay.
Let me just ask one question, though, John. On this, we all are agreed, though, that we should add that language near or adjacent to, right?
Well,
the argument that was the idea. It was simply
left out. Let's defer this issue to future consideration.
And where does that fit in the process, that future consideration?
When we come back to with the elements of the plan, with the elements of the draft plan pulled together, there will be additional detailed policy recommendations we'll make in the course of that as we understand more. We may revisit this or we may not.
I'd just like to make a comment about any clustering recommendations that we make, and that is somehow that we incorporate into it the fact that the open space that remains as a result of clustering, that in some way be permanently preserved, either through deeds or whatever. We did clustering 30, 35 years ago. Nobody remembered it. It was never recorded in a deed. came to the Board of Assessment, they said, this certainly should allow more than areas beside them where nobody remembered.
So what's
the and that part? Was what it was. I was furious, but I wasn't one of the judges. So.
Deep restriction.
Item number eight, regional development zone. That's essentially the area that can serve to accommodate growth. The recommendation there is to give the highest priority for allocation of existing wastewater treatment capacity to specially planned areas or regional growth areas that can accommodate TDR receiving zones. The goal there is to encourage through policy allocation of available wastewater capacity to those projects that voluntary or those municipalities that voluntarily adopt a TDR receiving ordinance.
And would this be the area to put in Tim's concern about septic?
Yeah, that's right. I think I gave you all some comments, and I would suggest septic that areas where we need to.
Yeah, I put that in item nine.
Nine.
Yeah.
Where did you put it?
Item nine, which is the resource protection standards. Again, these apply to all areas of the Highlands. The elements are to provide protection to wellhead protection areas. Essentially, those are drinking water, groundwater wells that provide drinking water supplies to prevent contamination of those supplies. Secondly, to prohibit expansion of future service areas within the critical natural resource area. So, even within our regional development or all three zones, we're going to have resource critical resource areas. We'll have Highlands open water protection areas, riparian areas.
I was getting at Tim's point before about right. failing septic
right.
systems.
And then I would add a third bullet yeah. that requires dedication available capacity to address public health concerns, yeah. including failing septic systems.
Yeah.
That's a resource protection standard.
Or to clean up waterways or whatever.
Or address a water quality concern, right? Item number 10,
smart. Sorry, Steve, just one last thing on nine, which is that in the list of critical resource areas, and again, going back to the Angle of the Act, that prime agricultural areas should be included in that list of natural resource areas.
Yes, I understand.
Okay. Well, same section of the act you're talking about. Yeah.
Item number 10, smart design standards. Again, these are site design standards that apply within all zones, require use of water conservation devices for any redevelopment or development activity, including renovations to existing single-family residences. That's intended to reduce demands from existing uses on wastewater capacity, as well as reduce demand of water consumption on water supply. Secondly is incorporate standards for mandatory inspection. There needs to be a statement added upon transfer of ownership of a new or existing single-family residence or commercial industrial development. This is intended to get at I&I problems. A major source of I&I is when people tie their sump pumps into their sewer lines.
That concern, I'm glad you clarified that, okay. Because we were not going to impose this.
No. So this would be in the context of a certificate of occupancy.
Do you think we might want to include in this, you know, other green building design standards?
Yeah, there will be, at a subsequent meeting, a whole session on smart design standards, which is going to include low-impact development, green building.
Do you want to add to this?
Well, Steve's saying is that there will be an additional policy paper specifically on
dealing with
that issue altogether.
Okay, because we mentioned only water conservation devices, but there's a lot of other things that we should look for.
Yeah, this was intended to reduce demand on capacity, wastewater capacity.
We're capturing the design standards as relate to sewer.
Under number 10, the first bullet, and other places, wherever you mention water conservation, I would suggest also say, and recycling, even though it's sort of implied, the recycling concept is a little bit different. And, you know, it is something that even DEP is trying to push now, particularly for aesthetic uses, such as, you know, golf courses and that kind of thing, to...
So water reuse?
Water reuse and recycling. So every place we say water conservation, also I would say water reuse and recycling. And then on the second bullet, I hear what you're saying about the sump pumps, but I was wondering, are you also thinking about perhaps in a commercial or industrial situation where flows of not be put in that may cause a pollution problem in that the receiving plant is not capable of handling it?
Well,
like a solvent or a, you know, something
those
like that.
Those rules already exist.
Yeah, there are industrial pre-discharge permits. This is.
So we're going to be covered? Because you say commercial.
Yeah, this is intended to address I&I.
Huge fines.
Just I&I.
Yeah, just
huge
I&I.
Huge fines. We found
it. I have one question about nursing on tap. In the opening paragraph, the idea is to encourage appropriate conservation-based design throughout the region. Can we, in order to encourage conservation-based design, require certain things?
Yeah,
encouraging or requiring?
Yeah, the smart design standards can be either mandatory or discretionary. And we've tried to distinguish between those. So where we're recommending require, we're recommending that be a mandatory design standard. Where we recommend, coordinate, develop, encourage, that would be a discretionary standard. So a require is a mandatory standard.
And any time we require that, and I'm disagreeing with you, we're creating obstacles to conformance.
So this is redevelopment or reconstruction. This is not taking an existing facility or structure.
That's only redevelopment? Smart design standards applies only to redevelopment?
No, it would require, it would include, in this case, in the first item would include renovations to existing buildings. It gets into a discussion that the comment occurred.
Redevelopment.
You know, that we'll have to define is what constitutes renovation, at what point is.
In this case, since you're going to be doing it, spending money anyway.
Yeah. And this gets to both the wastewater capacity issue as well as a water use issue. As we get into water availability, you know, there's going to be limitations on growth because there's not enough water. And if we can encourage as much as possible water conservation within the region as well as outside the region, it benefits growth and resource protection.
Encourage and
require. Yes. In this case, we're requiring.
What's that mean?
But you know, we might require some things like, you know, more efficient toilets.
Yes.
We might recommend some other.
Like water reuse, which is tough sometimes.
We can't require water reuse.
We'll have a few long evenings when we start reviewing the final language in the draft plan before it goes out. I mean, these are general introductory concepts. We're trying to frame the issue.
Glasses off, hat.
And we will.
We'll be having slumber parties.
Yeah, we will.
Exactly.
We will spend a lot of time together. I'm sure.
Especially planned parties.
So I'm not, you know, just
that's
I don't.
Fun.
I don't want to diminish the meaning of the words, but there will be opportunities in which we can spend a lot of time wordsmithing the document before it goes
on. 27 minutes.
Yes. Establish requirements for inspection reporting of individual on-site wastewater disposal systems. Essentially, and this is an established, it's not a requirement, although the staff may come back and require, we're still looking at how best to identify where there are failing systems, where there is public health concerns.
I would just suggest inserting maintenance before inspection because our maintenance program, something like that.
Yes.
it is a requirement. I mean, you have the word requirement in here.
Yes,
I'm
sorry. Yes. Regional growth standards. Require adoption of approved wastewater management plan or amendment to an existing plan substantially consistent with the Highland service area included in the RMP. Tim, this gets to the area that can be served within existing capacity, not that future expansion area. So that future expansion area that Nina, you got to doesn't have to be accommodated unless the town wants it.
I mean, a proper maintenance of on-site wastewater system, individual on-site wastewater systems, for us to establish a program of exactly what that is and for those systems to be followed.
You mean regular pumping?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a whole guidance that DEP has put together, but they never put in the law because too many people complained about it. So 798 doesn't have
to.
Well, but the maintenance it's common sense. It's things you should be doing if you want to.
Yes, it is. You're right. But not everybody does it.
But we have to develop a program. But I mean, we could sit down and talk about it. I mean, every 2 years, every 5 years, whatever, every 3 years, you pump your tank. I mean, there's a whole list.
And it's one of the reasons why they fail is because they haven't been properly maintained, and then that's a significant water quality.
Right. The EPA reports show that 85% fail because of that.
Often true, but. When the property is transferred, it's subject to another inspector. And if they fail and they don't perk, then it's the owner who didn't maintain those subjects that is responsible for
them. Preventing the failure makes a lot of sense in terms of pollution prevention and protecting water quality resources. And also, it's a very strong.
I don't think Jeff's arguing with you about it. I think it's a question of whether it's effective to require it of homeowners. An education program to do it. I'm saying it shouldn't be done.
Maybe the frequency of Ross's transaction analysis will tell us if they turn over frequently enough to do it. I don't know how long
the average time is. I'm sorry.
No, sorry.
There are septic maintenance districts in existence out there again, and without a whole lot of trouble, you can find some information from the effectiveness of them, how they're perceived, how owners they're perceived in terms of.
Right.
Requirements. So we ought to evaluate because it is.
I'm just advocating that they're part of a smart. They should be part of our smart design standard.
Maybe that's a place where we could find some more information about that, so you would know. I mean, our recommendation would be that since water quality is one of our top requirements, that we would, as a default, have it in there and provide you more information about how it could be affected.
CDP knows all about it. We got a good track record.
Item number 11, regional growth standards. Again, the requirement for a wastewater management plan or amendment substantially consistent.
Why substantially?
Because we recognize that during conformance there's going to have to be adjustments. Those plans will have to be reviewed and approved. If the council so desires, we can strike the word substantially and state consistent. It provides a degree of flexibility. The first bullet under item 11.
Or we could define consistent to include flexibility.
Well, I think you're going to define flexibility because we talk about this, and I think I raised this
with adjustments and revisions.
Adjustments and revisions. You know, we're talking about information, ground truthing in essence, right? Where we talk about the land use in that cover, okay, we base something on. Built that's an adjustment in my mind. I don't think we want to open the door to coming in and negotiating where the lines are.
Yeah, we define it in that resolution based upon new or updated information.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and
that bears repeating, I think.
I guess it's Scott's issue where if there's a outstanding contractual obligation, we have to have the ability to provide a little bit of flexibility, or towns we're going to.
Right, but that's new information that was not available. We could do that. This contractual obligation service this area. Right.
We can.
Just so you know, Mr. Chairman, I'm not prepared to vote in favor of some government official inspecting when I clean out my septic tanks. I mean, there is a certain point, folks, where we've got to respect private property rights, and I think that intrudes a little bit too far. You want to give me a $100 voucher because I'm doing good septic tank maintenance? I'll consider it. But, you know, at some point we've got to respect people's rights to just live their lives the way they want. If they want, one person wants to do it every 5 years, one wants to do it every year, it's fine. But we're ante up and pay. You know, I'm not here to provide 5 million people with water for nothing. And
well, if you don't have a program, though, and you don't outline what good maintenance is, and if you don't make it part of what you have to do when you put a new septic system in, then people just don't know what to do. And then you end up having failures, and then you end up having pollution.
Well, we didn't have the word maintenance in until you suggested it.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm suggesting it.
So I think we concluded we were going to get some more information.
Yes.
All right. Let's table that.
There was just establishing a record.
Second bullet.
Item number 11, second bullet. This stimulated a lot of internal discussion among staff. So
explain it clearly, because I got hung up on the
participle. Go ahead.
The premise behind this is that when there is areas that should be served by sewer and there is available capacity, then a municipality should not zone that area at a density that doesn't require sewer. For example, sewer is a finite resource within the region in terms of its ability to accommodate growth. If that capacity is consumed by 5 acre or 10 acre subdivisions, the question to the council is that an efficient use of that limited resource? The recommendation of staff would be conceptually that there needs to be a minimum density established within a minimum density established within the areas that should be served by sewer for projects that are connected to sewer, and that applies to both residential densities and commercial densities.
Yeah, that really sounds good, Steve. But in all honesty, if some town has 5 or 10 acre zoning, and we go in and say, "Listen, your sewer capacity would allow for 1.5 acre zoning," so you should do that. You don't think they're going to do that, do
no,
you?
No, but all this says is that project shouldn't be served by sewer.
Right. Yeah. Amend them to go into
that. That could be served by septic.
Yeah. It could be served by sewer.
Then you do it at a density that could be served by on-site wastewater or septic systems.
Okay. So, if that's what you were trying to say here, that we really need to work on the wording.
Okay, work on language.
Wasn't clear. And you're saying that I thought it was like 2 acre minimum. You could do septic.
No, the
2 acre minimum. So this I'm trying to reconcile that with that. Function.
No. This essentially says that the a residential project that's within an appropriate service area must have a density of at least 2 units per acre,
right,
in order to have access to sewer.
Well, what about between 2 units per acre and?
Then it's on. Then it is on-site wastewater disposal at a density that could be.
But you can't do on-site unless.
The
2 acre minimum lot size.
Right. Well, the jump may go from a half acre to 2, 5, or 10 acres. There might not be any transition between that. But what you're saying, or what you're establishing, is a policy that establishes the minimum density within areas served by sewer.
I think what you're saying, if you're building one house per acre, where do you fall?
You would have to be within an area that can accommodate that density on a septic system.
But that's contrary to regulations,
yes.
I think you're out of the 2 acre minimum.
I can't believe that we really need this. I honestly don't believe that anybody's going to do this.
Yeah, but what it does is, I know what you're saying about need it, but what it does is it says, if you want to have a sewer, then you can't be eating up huge pieces of land to go with that sewer.
And eating up the capacity at the same time.
But we can't make towns do any of this stuff anyway.
We can provide guidance to a town and requirements for conformance, because.
But if they're not going to buy into the conformance, they're not going to do this.
I,
Let them decide.
They want this, they want that. Well, maybe we can live with this provision.
We introduce things into the plan that discourages towns from complying? That's a possibility.
That's what I'm concerned about. Very much.
Yeah. But what I would encourage the council to do is develop policies that the council feels best addresses the requirements and goals of the act, and then enable the staff to sell that. Because if we try too hard to anticipate what a town will or will not accept, my concern is it becomes very subjective. It's hard to predict, and the question then becomes, are we doing that at the expense of meeting the goals and objectives or the requirements and goals of the act?
That's always been the balance.
Yeah. And we might find a situation where we make a mistake and we come back in 6 months and say we have to adjust this amendment in the plan because it's creating a huge problem with conformance. And
except that when you read about how rapidly development is going on in the Highlands region, I think that we should all want towns to embrace and buy into our plan as quickly as possible.
And so
I just think that we've just got to try to make it as palatable to the towns as possible.
Get consistent with the goal of the Highlands Act.
Exactly.
Our charge as members of this council.
And we can come up with the best plan in the world, but if none of the towns will do it, we will have accomplished nothing, and all that development will continue
and
to go on.
And if we make it so palatable that it doesn't achieve
the goals of the Act,
that's
a challenge.
Right.
So it is
very much
about.
I think that's one of the things we're going to learn from the draft plan, right? We're going to get.
Yeah, because we have time still.
In various iterations.
I know we're running time, so I'm going to close on this point. But I don't agree with this. And Steve, would you call me?
Yes.
I don't agree with that bullet point. I think we're either going to encourage more intense development if we require this that might otherwise be proposed there, and. It's not, you know, it's back to the, what if they want to build at a density of 1 acre? You know, we don't have to resolve that now. Maybe it's just too late and I'm not getting it. But I'm
adopting the policy that if in doubt, I'm scratching it out.
We
can revisit it, but I don't want to advance it as having been based on consensus.
Subject to, you know, further review offline.
Give highest priority to allocation available wastewater treatment to DDR receiving areas. We're constantly reinforcing that theme within all of the policies. Pre-conformance. We need to submit our Highlands wastewater service area map to DEP in the hopes of encouraging permits that are consistent with that goal. Develop guidelines to incorporate appropriate Highlands preservation area exemptions or prior approved projects into Highlands wastewater service area map. This is the reconciliation of allocations, contractual obligations, and exempt or prior approved projects. We have to go through a deliberate inventory during conformance and adjust accordingly. Develop guidelines in consultation with DEP regarding standardized procedures for preparing wastewater management plans. Promote consistency across the region that meets the regulatory requirements and hopefully facilitates approvals. Obtain designation establishing the Highlands Council as a designated water quality planning agency for the Highlands region. Staff recommends that the council seek gubernatorial approval to be the designated water quality planning agency in the Highlands region. Essentially, you would give to have the authority to develop and approve wastewater management.
And our two slides.
Yeah, right.
What's that?
That's a terrific idea.
He'll be back next week.
Yeah.
he said, wrote it down. He said, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
We have that on tape, right?
Yeah. Item number 13, conformance. The requirement that municipal conformance approval include an approved wastewater management plan that conforms to both DEP rules and is consistent with the regional master plan. Requirement that municipal and county conformance require delineation of existing sewer collection systems and identification of property served by those systems. We need a full accounting of the allocation or committed capacity as a requirement. Item 3, allow for adjustments and revisions to the Highlands wastewater service area to include specially planned areas, those are redevelopment areas, projects deemed exempt from the requirements of the Highlands Act,
areas that obtain final subdivision approval and treatment works approval prior to the effective date of the Act, those are prior approved projects that will have the allocation, or areas that possess an imminent threat to public health upon demonstration, again, that the critical natural resources of the Highlands will be reasonably maintained.
And to that last point, the plan itself wouldn't change.
No, there would be...
The revision adjustment consists of some document that would be a... Tom, you've explained this to me before.
Well, during conformance, the municipality or county going through the conformance process could demonstrate new information.
But how do we don't go back to the next council meeting and amend the plan to accommodate this. We write some...
No, I mean, I think the conformance process will be approving master plan revisions and ordinances that are consistent with the plan, and we're not going to go revisit the plan each and every...
But it's like in our, like, memorializing resolution or something, it would incorporate these...
Changes.
Yes.
We may change a map. Would we try to keep that
out? Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I would like to maintain the map anytime there's an adjustment or revision that changes in a boundary.
But there'll be adjustments, revisions that don't have map implications.
Yes. Yeah. That have relief from standards or...
Now, these service areas, the wastewater service areas, they're determined by the state.
They are approved by the state. And there is harmonization language and rules that require coordination with the Highlands Council prior to approval. So we're memorializing that into requirements for municipalities to open.
There are whole huge books and documents that define these services, wastewater service areas. So we're going to recommend that these be changed?
Oh, yeah. The most...
And also, the federal government has some kind of say in them as well.
Not in service areas, only in the wastewater treatment discharge, the facility itself. So they don't...
I'm not so sure about
that. Yeah, it's not quite
the 208 federal approval...
The 208 plans, you can't...
Okay.
Sewer areas,
that's
right. Yeah. Wetlands.
That's right, that's right. I'm sorry. Yeah, in most cases, wastewater management plans have to be updated within the Highlands region, so we're facilitating that. Most of them are out of date. They're not. They have service areas or areas served that aren't approved. It's a mess.
That relates to the first bullet point.
Yes,
it'd be much like we did with the co-op process. We give out grant dollars for towns to update their wastewater management
plans. Yes, provide the financial
and
support.
I just want to make the point that we are dependent on the DEP to be able to process those.
Yeah. And
so we need to. When do we achieve conformance? Just when the town submits. I'm just going to raise the question. We don't need to debate it now.
Right.
Is conformance going to be achieved by EP? Why, when they submit a conforming WMQ application?
What's the designated agency?
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay. Designated agency.
But generally, when they submit a plan that we determine conforms, would. When they submit a plan that is consistent with, that we determine is consistent with the RMP, they can be conformance can proceed. Yeah, in conformance. Thank you.
They won't need to when we we will make the decision and then they will incorporate it.
You got these very powerful.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, even
more than you want.
Five-year of the final bullet is coordinate efforts with DEP and wastewater utility authorities I would say to facilitate studies or models on dealing with TMDL. That's the intent of that. The language has to be worked on, but. One of the five-year goals is to be active in coordinating efforts on evaluating the effects of wastewater discharges on water quality, specific to TMDLs.
Related to that, it seems like you say you're going to work on the language, but while you're working on that, you also consider the idea that the models and the information that's gathered in the first and the second bullet point would then be used to inform the wastewater plans and to inform the whole revising, perhaps, the WQMPs or, you know, all to be used as a part of an iterative process that will then affect, you know, loop back around and affect where we began discussing this.
And this bullet is also intended to get to your issue of assimilative capacity analysis. Okay.
I will suggest, if I understand this correctly, that some of these are a subset of another one. So obtaining designation as a designated water quality planning agency is a goal, and then in the interim, or until that happens, there are a number of these other bullets would happen.
Correct.
Thank you. So that might help as an organizational thing.
I'll just make a comment and move on. This assimilative analysis, and it's down the road, but I just question that. And at some point, I'd like to discuss that further, whether we should be, whether that's something that we should be doing.
It's not something we should be doing, but we should certainly be coordinating and facilitating that effort. I mean, it's something that TMDLs is a big issue. We would like to be involved in the middle of that as much as possible.
But somewhere in this.
But I will talk to you.
Add it to the list. Somewhere in this, we should, at some point, whether it's us or DP or whoever it is, deny permits unless they've updated a wastewater management plan. I mean, this is outside of conformance, even. Or it's beyond conformance. We should be requiring over a certain period of time, maybe over 5 years, that if there's any old wastewater management plans hanging out, let's say is a town that chooses not to conform, but then they come in for if we're the designated agency, they come in for a permit, some sort of a permit, that there should be some encouragement there.
Well, let me look at the wastewater management plan.
Yeah, but sometimes they can do amendments that are not comprehensive in the permitting process. We can talk about it.
We're determined to get done by 10.
Great.
Coordination and consistency considerations, item number 15. Generally, just efforts to coordinate existing regulatory programs. There's provisions for tracking discharges more effectively on a regular basis in coordination with DEP. Monitoring the effects on water quality in the region as a result of wastewater discharges in coordination with DEP and USGS. Coordinating regulatory review programs with DEP to ensure consistency with the plan. And technical guidance, develop technical guidance with the DEP to promote water conservation measures throughout the region, inside and outside the Highlands.
I have a question about these bullets. Should we have also be developing, as part of coordination and consistency, a easy method of referring to enforcement issues that need to be addressed by enforcement at DEP?
I think that'll be a general issue for the whole plan.
For ours. I'm talking.
No, it'll be true for every policy area.
Right, but in this one, there's specific. The reason I'm bringing it up here is because we're talking about water quality. For instance, the bullet number 2. We're talking about identifying and monitoring water quality concerns. So there's specific issues that, in doing that, we're going to come up against that need to be sent to enforcement. Yeah. I'm just suggesting
the Gypsy's permitted facilities.
That we have some mechanism set up that's going to make that easy, and a follow-up through our own staff to make sure it's easy. I know we're not going to be the policemen, but just to have an easy mechanism set up. Efficient.
Understood.
Not easy, efficient.
Maybe in a year, Tracy, we could put something to develop and disseminate information regarding proper septic system maintenance.
That may be in 16.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. So we would have the information available, we would distribute it to people, at least then we know that the people know how to do it properly.
There are a number of
That'd be okay, Kurt?
There are a number of publications that we can use. Adject puts out a very good one, as a matter of fact.
The state has a lot, too.
Just help promote that.
Yeah. I'll buy that when you agree to have the other 5 million people be told how to flush their toilets.
It's just about
a certain point where, guys, we just got to let people live.
I'm talking about an insurance policy that helps you avoid spending a whole lot of money to fix a broken septic system.
Putting in systems for $50,000 to $100,000 teaches you real fast how to take care of your septic
system. Not if you move from the city and don't even know.
That's what we're all doing.
I will defend this issue. I mean, I agree with you generally that anytime I see the word require, I read it very carefully. However, a lot of people have moved into New Jersey and this islands region that we're talking about who have come from areas where they had sewers and where they throw everything down the toilet, right?
Yeah.
And they don't know how to live in areas that require septic or require that kind of maintenance.
Yeah.
So there's a huge education issue. This is not to demean those people in any way, but simply to say that they have to be educated. You just don't do something like this when you live in a septic sewer area.
Yeah.
So I think it's a process of education. They need to live on a farm for a while.
Don't pour grease on the
sink. Mandatory check into the region. It's not the first
call. You've got the final policy, right?
This is an excellent segue to item number 16, local participation.
I thought we covered 16, Steve. I'm sure we covered that already.
It's only submitted,
Can I get a pass on this one?
Let me just say, the local participation committee that Mimi chairs met before this meeting, and which I think was today. And there are two things I remember. One is, I think your conclusion maybe was the committee should meet again next week.
Yes.
So that should be scheduled and everyone should be aware of that. There's a sort of threshold question in there which I just thought people think about and not discuss now, and also for the other members of the public who are here, is when we put this plan out, the draft plan out, how long should the comment period be? Because that will determine when we schedule public hearings, it will determine when we'll be able to process the comments and adopt the final plan, and if, like everything else, it's going to be a tension between having a long public comment period so that people have a lot of opportunity to read the plan and take time and comment, and a shorter one so that we can adopt the plan more quickly. And
let me recommend Division of Fish and Wildlife. For example, and maybe other agencies you're familiar with, 90-day comment period is that may not be suitable for us.
Let's
thinking about 90 days to find out where we are.
But the governor said we don't want to deny people the opportunity to we're
going to
have to balance.
So let's not discuss that this evening.
Please. Why did you bring it up, John?
Well, because I think
we should think
about it.
We are inviting comment now, though.
Yeah. We are about to invite comment now. Yes, so we were going to... we're going to adjourn this meeting, and anyone who has to leave can leave, and anyone who wants to stay will stay, and then we'll have all public comment. So is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
A second? Was in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I think this meeting was even better than last week, so thank you all. So I think we will just go to public comment right away.
We can start working on next week.
Yeah. Meet in the back, right? Where are our next issues?
Wasteful water is seen at Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Roger, good work on the second. Watch out, big guy.
Hi there. I forgot my cell phone. I borrowed my friend here's. We just adjourned the meeting. Now we have to listen to the public for a while. So I will be home sicker.
Kind of get good.
Yeah, right. Bye bye. Thank you, Mike.
All right. 2:30 people are heading in.
How many people would like to speak? Okay.
Before Julia speaks, I want to thank all the people that stayed here till 10 o'clock to talk, to listen to utility capacity. You all deserve a round of applause for being that interested in it. Right, so I'm not happy.
Could you note that these comments were very well written up last week, and I'm sure they'll be well written up again.
Yes.
And they do get read.
Yes. Actually, that's a good point. I was going to say that, but I said at the beginning of the meeting, but some people may not have been here, is that what we did last week with this comment period and we'll do this week is write a brief summary of what everyone says for all the members who are not able to say. So.
Julia Summers, Executive Director, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. We have submitted our position in writing to the Council on Historic and Cultural Resources. However, there's one point I really want to reinforce. In essence, quote, "It is a huge challenge to attempt the evaluation and protection of historic resources with limited information readily available on the resource scope, integrity, significance, or even location. It is important that the Highlands Council acknowledge that the lack of baseline data is a material weakness in achieving its broad mission, and that there is a great potential for the discovery of significant historical resources during the development of the RMP, and more so subsequent to its acceptance." So we just want you to make sure that you recognize it's in our comments, but I just wanted to emphasize that. Also, I have just given written comments to Patty. New Jersey Audubon has submitted comments, and I was asked to read them, but I'm not going to read them. I'm just going to emphasize one a little bit. They conclude their position with, "We would like to stress that currently available data provides a baseline to designate significant natural areas, but the identification and delineation of SNAs is an iterative, ongoing process, just like with historic resources. In the future, these areas should reflect changes in land cover and additional species and plant community data. For example, discovery of additional plant populations may lead to additional SNA designations. Conversely, numerous additional discoveries of plant populations may lead to delisting. In other words, a species is no longer considered rare of particular species and a reduction of SNA designations. Lastly, on wastewater utility treatment capacity limitations. In the preservation area, the New Jersey Highlands Coalition proposes capping pollutant loadings at their current levels for all pollutants from point source discharges. In this case, wastewater treatment facilities, most particularly for phosphorus and ammonia. Lands upstream of the preservation area, in other words, they're included in your deliberations because their waters flow into the preservation area, should also have the pollutant loadings capped if introduced by a wastewater facility to any stream flowing into the preservation area. In the planning area, we hope you recommend that DEP permit no new sewer hookups without a community having updated its wastewater management plan. And finally, we hope you persuade DEP to do away with annual averaging of NJPDES permits and move to a three-month average instead." Thank you.
Annual average for what?
NJPDES permits.
For all?
Wastewater. We're, in this particular case, we're talking about wastewater because that's the permit that they use. You know.
Those were comments of the Audubon site or the Highlands Coalition?
It was both. The significant natural areas was the Audubon Society, and I have handed a letter on their paper to Patty. The rest was the Highlands Coalition. Thanks.
We didn't address the capping of pollutants issue at all, did we? Is it anywhere in the scheme?
No, not for the, you're talking about the discharge permit. No. Not in this.
In the preservation area, we recommended that.
other comments?
Hi, I'm Wilma Fry, and I'm also speaking on behalf of the Highlands Coalition. I'd like to address the protection of Scenic Resource Protection Program. And I think the document has a lot of very good ideas in it. However, there needs to be an implementation mechanism in this, and it really, I think, really needs to be in the plan. I think that we need to start and actually have scenic resources identified in this first iteration of the regional master plan. And I think we need, you know, it could start with the easy things, the existing parkland, which is publicly owned land. The existing preserved farmland, which also is preserved and it's, you know, it's some kind of a public or private entity, which has already put a restriction on it. Existing or almost designated wild and scenic rivers, the Delaware, the Musconetcom. Existing scenic byways, Route 29, probably Route 57, which is under serious consideration. Existing reservoirs, public water supply sources, existing trails, the Appalachian Trail, the Highlands Trail, which is partially on public land and partially on private land, trails which are already state parks, the Sussex Branch Trail, the Columbia Trail, Patriots Path, etc., and the Morris Canal, which is recognized by Warren County as a resource that they are very intent on protecting. And I think that is the list that we should start with. And then the next step would be develop an evaluation tool to allow organizations and individuals and so forth to make input and suggestions. And then the council itself should work on identifying resources that are regional in character importance. And that would include, you know, perhaps a system of scenic roads, scenic byways, ridgelines, other trails, waterways, and the viewsheds. And granted, it's not the easiest thing to determine viewsheds and determine which ones are, you know, high enough priority that are regional in nature, but I think that the council needs to have a regional highland system and then also a methodology that can help municipalities designate resources that are of more local importance. And I think the ideas about the resource protection and smart design standards are, you know, sound very good, and I would support those. But you have to designate them first in order to have these standards apply. So I really urge the council to have a, you know, have a list to go in with. Thank you.
Sorry. Good evening. Scott Olson from Byram Township. I just wanted to address Tracy's concerns about septic management. Byram was part of an MP3 program for lake management, and part of that program included septic management. We've got lake communities, very tightly developed, quarter-acre lots. All of them were resort communities at one time or another, and they've now become full-time homes. Over the last 10 years, Byram has rolled out a septic management plan requiring pumping every 3 years, requiring inspection upon change of property ownership. And there was a lot of conflict at first to property owners' rights. You have no business inspecting my septic. And I think that with the proper education and the proper fees and service fees, it can be done very easily. We've got almost 95% compliance, and in the first round found 30% failures. So it's really cleaned up the septic systems. It's brought a water quality issue that was a problem in Lake Mohawk, Cranberry Lake, out and fix part of it, and I think you should consider that seriously.
Thank you. Oh, good evening. Wow, what a long meeting, huh? I missed last week's meeting. I was lucky enough to be on vacation, so. But I heard about some of the sparks that were flying.
I just wanted to clarify one thing. I know there was a lot of discussion about 600-foot buffers in the Pinelands, and I just wanted to clarify that there were, in fact, buffers put in a very limited area of Jackson Township on the main stem of the Toms River and the Ridgeway Branch within the portion of Jackson Township located in the Pinelands National Reserve. And that was done in result of a two-year study, and you know, a lot of data was collected and a lot of work was done. So I just wanted to mention that because I know there was conversation going back and forth about, you know, the Pinelands adopted 600-foot buffers and let's do that and let's start there and so forth. So I just wanted to clarify that. And also in terms of the discussion today, I think it's very important to have a policy that was discussed. I know it was tabled and we'll have further discussion. But the idea of clustering and allowing, you know, with the 80% set aside is very, very valuable. And just to leave you with this thought, the central tenet of the Pineland CMP, which is held up a lot in this, in these discussions as a model, is to concentrate development in the most appropriate areas while preserving land of higher ecological value in an undeveloped state through clustering provisions. So just something to think about. I think it's very, very important to keep that in mind as we develop the plan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sue Buck Oxford. You already knew that, though. Where
do we get one of those T-shirts?
Yeah, we got a couple left over. Price is going up.
Especially for you.
Well, I find myself in agreement with a lot of what's been said. Last week, I mean, during the month of August when I read the technical releases, and then last week's meeting and this week's meeting, I think it's now confirmed that there's going to be very little in the way of new data. The baseline that I think a lot of us in the outside world were expecting is not going to be there. We were expecting these things to be identified. When you read the Act, it makes it sound like that. We're going to identify scenic resources, historic resources, sensitive areas. That's not going to happen. And that causes me concern for a number of reasons. I mean, I do care about preservation of some of the things. I really do. And it's not going to happen if they're not being identified. If you leave it to the municipalities to decide what should be preserved and what shouldn't, or what's sensitive and what's not, it's not going to happen because it's too controversial. They're going to get sued too. The council needs to take the responsibility to do that. The biggest concern that I personally have about it is that without the identification of those layers and the designation of what's sensitive and can't be developed, you cannot develop a TDR system. We now know, last week it was announced, it'll be at least 2 years before the regional master plan is evolved and in place.
I'm sorry, where was that announced?
Yes, it was.
Announced it.
That was part of the Dante's overview.
A year and a half from now or something
right.
Like that.
Right. When you added all the pieces up for the review.
At the very end,
conformance. Right. Not until conformance will landowners be able to take advantage of a TDR program, so that's bad enough. At this point, you can't even identify either the sending or the receiving zones, which we've been waiting for since last February. There's no chance that that's going to happen for a very, very long time, unless we identify today, and I thought we already had that, and that's where we were. We're going to be announcing this area is environmentally sensitive, this area is historic, this area is scenic, and we're going to work cordon them off from development. That's going to be your TDR sending zone. So far, all we know is the preservation area is the sending zone. We knew that all along. We knew that 2.5 years ago. But without identifying and quantifying it, it's impossible to quantify the receiving area and how many credits are going to exist. It can't be done. It's a mathematical impossibility. That gives me very, very deep concerns because we are so many more years away from this becoming a reality than I ever in my wildest dreams imagined. And I have friends that will be dead before it's developed.
Good morning. I have a couple of questions first. I have
been sitting here listening all evening, and I guess I have comments on practically every paper, and felt like raising my hand and joining the discussion. Are there going to be very soon new editions of these papers, especially the policy? I mean, I'm wondering what I comment on at this point. Do I comment on what was discussed tonight and hope that that gets into the amendment process? Or in a short period of time, will it be a new one on the web page? And I should comment on that.
I think you should, in general, you should comment on this, on what you saw tonight, because I think the process will be that the next time the revision of these papers, for the most part, will come to the council in the form of a combined composite draft plan for us to consider and vote on. So any comments you can submit soon, based on what you've heard here and read here, would be valuable.
Okay. Is there some reason why the maps that are on the wall can't be put up there so that they can answer your questions about, like, sewer service areas? I mean, there's a map back there that has it. It would be better also for the audience so that we know, you know, exactly what you're talking about. I mean, you have the layers, I believe, so might consider that. I guess I basically disagree with Susan, I believe her name is. I've been impressed with how careful you all have been for probably practical reasons to use identified and established lists and databases that have established legally defensible processes and to establish them. And I think at this point to come up with a plan that adds on to the lists of historic places or special areas or other places like that, you really risk abandoning the whole public participation process, that all of these lists were made through a public notification, an opportunity for the landowners to participate. And so if you come up with scenic areas or historic resources that haven't had that kind of public input, I thoroughly approve of inventorying what we know now and setting up a process. And if anything gets proposed in the public comments, then maybe they should be the first ones you look at as soon as you get your process set up. So I would like to support you in doing that and having this bubble up from down below rather than having the mapping details imposed up above. as far as the... just one other thing, I think, because we're all tired here. The economic indicators, I was very concerned when you said you were using the Pinelands model, because when the Pinelands does a study of their economic impacts, they throw the entire town, part of which is in the Pinelands and the rest is outside, into the study, which means that the results in the data is skewed because the area outside is thriving and the area inside might not be. So I hope that you won't follow them with that model, that when you do your economic impacts, you deal with the parts of the town that are in the Highlands and be very careful not to use the statistics. I know this is hard, but leave the statistics out for the part of the town that's outside. Also, another thing the Pinelands has never paid any attention to is the economic analysis of the agricultural industry. And there's lots of data out there. It's very easy to get. The National Ag Statistics Service is doing research yearly, monthly, practically. And you don't have that in your list either. And I think if sustainable agriculture is, you know, one of your goals, that perhaps you should make sure that some kind of assessment of the condition of the ag industry is included. And there's also nothing in here about business and commerce and industry and so forth. And is that totally out of the spectrum of the Highlands plan? That, you know, retail sales, corporate earnings, isn't that economic factors that should be, you should have indicators on too. So thank you very much, and I'll be sending some comments.
Thanks.
My name is David Shope. I live in Long Valley. First, on your historical or cultural thing, the first thing you discussed, I think, tonight, I thought we had buried the, by virtue of you not acting on a resolution concerning just anybody nominating an area, whether it be for endangered species or whatever it may be. I don't know if you recall this, Mr. Weingarten. Yeah, okay.
It was about a map. Not a mapping system.
Yes, and that's what we're talking about here when we're talking about stakeholders who have a stake in somebody else's bird. Participating in a process of nominating certain areas of other people's property, generally speaking, for, quote, preservation or special consideration. At the time of the when this resolution was considered by you, I suggested, and I'll suggest again, that there be a full-blown inquiry. First of all, beginning with notification of the property owner of a potential sighting of something or other, so that a full-blown inquiry can be conducted with those people who are making the identification, and as a consequence of it, should there be an error, that person or that group be subject to economic sanctions in the form of civil penalties or whatever. No reason for them to cause me grief as a property owner and get off scot-free because they thought they saw something. A baseline economic indicator, that white paper. What should be done is an effect on the real stake owners, that is the property owners, for the subtraction from their net worth and the devaluation of their property. This has all kinds of ripple down effect, whether it be sending a kid to college, buying a new piece of equipment, whatever it may be. I do not notice anywhere a consideration of this factor. It is much less of a hypothetical to make this determination than it is to determine what is a view shed and what is not. It should be easier for you to do. Also, I would like an accounting. In the Act, it says that the surplus beyond $75 million, which is to be skimmed off so people can have their beaches rebuilt, that balance, whatever it may be, from the realty transfer tax should go to Highlands Land Preservation. Where's the money? I don't see a dime. I would like an accounting of this fund. It should have started to accrue in 2004 when this bill was signed, so there should be a tidy penny there. If it has been diverted, I'd like to know where it went to and to what part of the general revenue did it go to. Ag viability. Helen spoke to it. I think you'll find that the numbers do not bode well for agricultural viability, particularly up in this neck of the woods where the soils aren't the greatest. We have steep slopes. We have this. We have all sorts of things. I would think that agricultural viability, when it is determined, should be based on the pre-Highlands value of the land. That should be the basis for a return on equity calculation to see exactly where Highlands viability is in terms of agriculture. I keep on hearing about agricultural lands, blah, 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 with no consideration as to whether it's worthwhile to plant anything. Public comment, I have a suggestion for the public comment period that you discussed just briefly. And my suggestion would be 1 minute per preservation Highlands acre owned. I think you'll get Hank Quamp having a long conversation. I'll be in there too. And for those who don't own a Highland acre, they shut up. Also, just in the normal course of things, I'm not really acquainted with the shorthand terminology, like TMDL. I think it means, well, I don't know what it means. But you have a, I know it's just what we do these days. We speak in the shorthand of our own particular area of expertise. But as a courtesy to me, perhaps even if you explain the term once, I may get it. Thank you.
Oh, what is that?
Yeah.
So total maximum daily load.
So. Right.
I think that's what I just experienced.
That's
true.
Any other comments?
Yes. My name's Hank Twump. I'm a farmer in Tewksbury, and I admire you for sticking around so long. I do have a problem with the public comment period. Being almost eliminated. If you'll remember when we first started with the public comment, we had 3 minutes in the beginning and 3 minutes at the end. And during discussion, without any dialogue, I mean, it's our land that you people up here are telling us what we can and what we can't do with it. So I feel, and this is just from a farmer's point of view, is we should be at least half of the farmers up here telling you people what's no good and what's good. I mean, we're not against everything. I mean, we never were. We're probably the best conservatives go in New Jersey. I mean, not, you know, I can remember my dad. Gee, we got things, you know, save this, save that. No, we can't put that. It's close to, before DEP was even involved. I mean, but this whole thing, and I admire you people for staying and putting up with this, and I was very surprised to see the governor here, and I was disappointed. He did say equity, but he also said guard state preservation, which is pennies on a dollar to a farmer. But the other thing that I was disappointed in, and I guess maybe he took off from your point, is he let all you people speak, but nobody from the public. And basically, we're all here. You people are here, and you're going to tell us what we can do and can't do on our land, either that or DEP, which you're part of. So that's basically my points. And thank God it rained today. I would like, and a great suggestion, is that you have all the public meetings at 7 o'clock at night, wherever you want to have them, and let anybody get up there and talk for whatever time, because that's the last time that people are going to have something to say before it becomes law, because you're making these things, and we get 3 minutes to say what we want, no dialogue. I mean, between anybody in this room, if we have a problem, you can solve it by talking back and forth. When you're talking to, you might as well talk to the wall. I mean, it's tough. No. But you understand what I'm saying? Yeah, but you and I could talk outside on the boardwalk and we could solve some problems. When you're in here, there's nothing being solved. I mean, you people are working like the devils. I mean, it's ludicrous, and you're really trying to do a great job, and I admire you for the time that you put in. I couldn't do it. If it wasn't raining today, I wouldn't be here. And I appreciate you having the 4 o'clock meetings and the later ones, because it's the only time that a farmer has time to get out. You can ask Kurt. It's nothing new. I mean, we got to make it when we can, when the sun is shining. Basically, that's it. But I would, on a public meeting, and yes, on a time frame, 6 months is too short. You know what I mean? To run the meeting. Because there's a lot of people. If you remember when this Highlands Act was started, they had public meetings, the legislature held it. And they, before East High School, they brought in the SWAT team. There were so many farmers and people there. They weren't happy with it. I mean, so, you know, that's all gone over the dam. But here we are. You're making these rules up, and you're going to govern us for the rest of our life. And not only that, but for 2 years, there's been no private sales of farms since this Highlands Act. All right? Now you're talking before this thing gets implemented, maybe another year and a half or 2 years before anything can happen. So that's 4 years out of someone's life, which you can't do anything. And I think that's unjust. And when they passed this legislation, the legislation passed this bill with the intent that nobody would be harmed. Well, you come up and tell me that I haven't been harmed because I lost my equity. And it's a proven fact because the 12 farms that were preserved, the value on pre, post, or however you want to say it, was down 70%. So, listen, guys, you got to help us. So whatever you can do, we'd appreciate it. I mean, I'm just, you ask me about the Highlands, I could tell you just about anything. That's the matter with it. But God bless you all, and thank God I'm here tonight. So, we'll see you.
Is that it?
Other comments?
That's it.
Another last word? All right, well, everybody drive home safely. Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Thank you, everybody. Please, if you don't have a